Hello and welcome to the Scotchcast. I'm your host, Alf Bessick, and joining me today is Darbleton.
Hello. How's everyone doing today?
Very well.
Good, sweet.
And you, Brahma. He's just silent.
Yo.
Sitting there staring at his screen. He's like,
Hey.
You look soulless right now. I'm sorry I dragged you away from Hitman.
I'm tired. It's like I'm on a normal sleep schedule now, and I'm like getting, it's like sleepy time at 9:42 p.m. I don't know.
It's 9:42 p.m. I'm so sorry. Yeah. I'm so sorry.
So late. My God.
We're also starting this like 2 hours earlier than we normally start it, so.
We're starting 20 minutes before we usually get together for this, and usually takes us a half hour before we start recording.
That's right.
Australia privilege. You don't even know what we have to deal with, Zinek. You don't even know.
It is the 30th of April, or for me, it's the 1st of May.
No, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Jack, do you know what today is?
I don't get it.
It's Metal Gear Solid 2. This is the day that they... I'm not even a fan of Metal Gear Solid.
Holy shit. I didn't know that. You're dropping fucking truth bombs on me right now. That's fantastic.
April
30th. Metal Gear Solid 2. Nice. if you mean fucking Megatons hit between when we record this and when it gets up, we won't be talking about them. But Megatons did hit last week, which we didn't get a chance to talk about. And since we start with the news nowadays, I get to have the fun times of having to talk about Nintendo while Duran's not here. But first...
Oh, yeah.
We tried to get Duran on. Like, I tried to get Duran on. He couldn't make it.
To defend this fucking company.
No, yeah. He actually had a bit more negative opinion than me, but we'll get to that later.
Always just laughs more than genuine.
Just laughing.
Like, what's happening?
So the most important news that happened over the last week was that at PCH-5, Persona is having a countdown.
I thought you were talking about like a location in EVE Online or something.
I thought when people say P5, they mean the permanent 5 seats in the UN Security Council.
Yeah, well, that too. Yeah, definitely.
Well, only crazy people, because like anyone who knows what they're talking about is actually talking about Persona 5, obviously.
Obviously.
There's a countdown on the Atlus website to the 5th of the 5th. In which there's going to be some Persona-based news. That's literally all I have to say about it. And you'll probably, if at a minimum, I'll record something by myself to talk about that. Just so we have someone talking about it and excited at the time. But that's like, considering it's the first thing in 4 days. and the annoying thing is because Japan... It's not like it'll be happening at like 1 a.m. in the morning for me. It'll be happening like in the middle of the day because we're only like 2 hours separated from Japan and Australia.
Could I just ask you, the last time they have hosted an event, do you remember what happened? I was there with you.
It is fucking daylight, like yesterday to me. Like waiting days for the countdown to start, and the start of the countdown being the delay, like the announcement of the delay, and the end of the countdown being a fucking concert where the only thing that was revealed was a fucking, like, who's singing the main theme of the game. Yes, I remember Noobarama, what the fucking last fucking thing was.
So why are you excited? Why are you excited? Do you actually think that they're going to release the date of the game and it's going to be this year? Do you actually think this?
There are only two possibilities. It is either the date or a delay, and either way.
Okay, so which one do you think it is? Genuinely.
Okay, so I genuinely think it's going to be the date this time.
This year, 2015?
Do you think it's going to be an announcement for, it's going to be a date for when they give the date of
the date.
Is it going to be a countdown to the date that they're going to announce what day it comes out
countdown?
On? Yeah.
Because it's on the 5th of the 5th, like at that point, he's like, okay, well, that's a Persona day, right? It's the Persona 5 day. I think that there's like been rumors in Japanese gaming press that it's going to be coming out in Japan between August I think August 15th and September 30th. So sometime before Final Fantasy 15 is when it's slated.
I mean, it's also the day after Star Wars Day.
May the 4th.
Be with you.
Nice. Yeah. Shut up. So that slate that they want to get out before Final Fantasy 15, which I think is an interesting stance because, like,
yeah, I don't know about. As long as Atlus can make their game run higher than 15 FPS, I don't know what Final Fantasy can do that much.
Like, I can't name a Final Fantasy game that's been better than Persona game for the last like 15 years. So it's like,
I mean, to be fair, you are a diehard Persona fan.
Well, even if you look at like anything, like any metric, like Metacritic, OpenCritic, like Persona games are averaging at like 90 to 92.
Well, like they also like there's less of those than there are Final Fantasies, correct?
Yeah.
They spend more time in the oven on them, so that makes sense.
And just by pure metric, this is the fifth one as opposed to the 15th one.
15th one.
So yeah,
that's like 20 times more than the fifth one. I don't know.
Yeah,
I can't
that's the exact multiplier that's involved there. It's also like kind of sad because that, like, even though there have only been 5 Persona games, you're actually wrong, Thorbleton. Square spends longer on their games. They just do a worse job of them. Like, this is Final Fantasy 15, previously announced as Final Fantasy Versus 13, which was announced in 2006. This is a 2010 game, which is about the same amount of time that Persona, like, since Persona 4. But in between the two, fucking Atlus put out Catherine. So it's like, not even, like, no. Like, Square has had longer to bake this. And it's probably going to be a worse game. Anyway, that's longer than I want to talk about Persona because I'm the only one here who actually cares. The next piece of small news, which we'll get to, is someone talked to me or told me about some WoW stuff, and I was like, "Why are we talking about WoW in 2016?" And then they're like, "No, it's actually a piece of news." So Thurbleton,
thanks. It's great setup on that. I don't know where you're going with that. Someone. See, it's not exactly that, like, so a WoW server called
Nostromus.
Yeah, Nostromus. It was something Nostradamu, but it was not. Yeah. It's a very popular, from what I've been told, a very popular vanilla server. That is to say,
I like internet names. Yeah. Oh, by the way, internet names always great.
Oh, yes. They're the best. They were running on original pre-expansion server that like anybody could just sign up for. They didn't have to pay any fee to this third party because if they did that, they'd probably just get slammed immediately by Blizzard. And it's been going for years. And then out of the blue, Blizzard decides to like give them cease and desist, shut down our like army of lawyers. Will take you guys for every penny you're worth and then some unless you don't shut down. And it's just a weird move for Blizzard and. Like people have often talked about, like, what are we going to do when games, especially modern games that require an online connection, like when the companies decide to shut them down?
Because it's a issue on like an archiving level.
Yes.
Because part of the reason why this was interesting that this server was running is because they're essentially an archive. They're essentially an archive, aside from the fact that it let people play Vanilla WoW who wanted to play Vanilla WoW. It was an archive of Vanilla WoW. For all those people who actually still gave a shit, right?
Yeah, especially since Cataclysm happened, the Cataclysm expansion, you can't play original WoW anymore. Like that's gone for all time, except unless you go through this third party route. People have asked Blizzard, like, "Hey, we want to give you money for this thing. Like, we realize you guys want to keep making new stuff with expansions, but some of us want to just keep playing the old stuff. We don't like the new stuff." Or like we just like the vanilla more, and Blizzard time and time again has said no, almost in a way of like we know better than you what you like.
There's a video at BlizzCon of a couple people asking, you know, Thurb is nodding his head because he knows what I'm talking about.
Yep.
Where an audience member asked a dev, it's like,
I don't even know if it was a dev. I think it was like money.
Lead. It's one of the head. Yeah, and then he asked, you know, we'll pay more money, you know, could you bring back separate vanilla servers? And then the dev fucking laughs and he's like, you don't want that at all. And it's just in the most snarky sort of, oh, look at these fucking idiots. They don't know anything about our game.
It's weird that like they had that stance, which was fine, that like they ended up like not doing their own thing with legacy servers, but they let these side things persist, and then out of the blue they just give the cease and desist order for like, hey, this needs to be shut down. Hopefully like this BlizzCon or something, they'll announce legacy servers and start making money on that. Who knows? Like that's the hope. But if they're just stamping it out for no reason, like that's the sadder thing of just like, why like, do this?
I would like to even say that fucking RuneScape even holds its like classic multiple versions of like its classic games. So nobody plays like current RuneScape. Everybody plays like fucking 2004, 2005 RuneScape. And the fact that, you know, like Blizzard is not only just saying, you know, we're not willing to invest and you don't, it's just the pure sort of snarkiness and just awfulness that it's coming out of
it's,
their devs.
It's one of those things that like Blizzard is almost known for this. Like it's one of those things that are like, it's one of the many undiscussed things about the PC gaming community in a couple of different senses, because like there's things like Steam, like so many people hold Steam up as this like grand thing, but there's a lot of fucking problems with Steam. Like at a minimum, I get charged so much just from living where I am, and that makes no fucking sense. And it's not even accounting for GST; it's just like stupidly large amounts of money for some of these games, which makes no sense because they're essentially repeating the same mistakes of like other retailers. Other things like until recently their used game policy, which thankfully they fixed, but also like their continual like lack of good communication with players. But that is like repeated almost one to one with Blizzard. And again, because Blizzard makes ostensibly good games, like people love Overwatch right now, right? That gives them a free pass to beat total assholes. And I don't know why that gives them a free pass, because almost in any case where you try to criticize these large publishers, you get a lot of people who are just defending them out of the love for their games.
It's a weird sort of like, I used to be like that, and mm-hmm. I've kind of had the sheep's wool pulled like over my head, and like I can see now like a lot of the same stuff. And I'm not trying to like look down anybody who is a fan of Blizzard. I hope people are fans of all sorts of things, but like not to the point where you don't see the faults for the things that you love.
Right. And there is a, and this has come up a couple times on NeoGAF recently of like people being critical about games, like the, Chinese room. And I don't want to talk about this because it'll just make me angry, but the Chinese room, recently Twitter responded. So the Chinese Room official Twitter recently, Twitter responded to the GameSpot official Twitter posting an article about The Witcher using a piece of art that wasn't even put out by CD Projekt, which is about put out by the company they employed to make the trailer. So the art has the model who the company employed to make the trailer used for the trailer posing in lingerie. Right, so it's just this woman in lingerie put next to this article about The Witcher, and Chinese Room essentially Twitter replied to GameSpot the Witcher guys retweeting what GameSpot.
Before you any further in this, I just want to say Twitter, the best place to have an online discussion.
Yeah,
and civil discourse.
100%. Like civil discourse and like meaningful discussions about any topic.
Like it feels so, like, you know. It sounds like the person who like logged on to access the before, like I don't even know how the story ends, but like the person who logged on the Chinese room kind of knew they were throwing a grenade out there, but were just so pissed at the article and they just did it in a moment of like fervor. But
yeah. And it hasn't been removed because I just went to Twitter and it's still up there. So they're standing by that tweet. They literally at replied to GameSpot. So they're replying to a GameSpot fucking article. So which just shows this woman in lingerie, and they're like, so this is the GameSpot tweet. Cyberpunk 2077 is more ambitious than The Witcher on every single front, and then has a GameSpot link to a GameSpot article.
Oh, yeah.
And then the Chinese Dream response is, but is just as sexist if that image is anything to go by.
Did they do the thing where they put a period in front of the at GameSpot so that way everyone can see it?
I assume.
I don't know, because it just makes an image of the GameSpot tweet. I don't know what that's doing. I don't understand Twitter.
Whatever.
So first and foremost, that's not sexism. That's objectification. Those are two different things. You should look them up. At a minimum level, if you're going to have criticism, have the correct fucking criticism. But that aside, like, there's a difference between being actively critical and then doing, like, stupid drive-by tweets like this and having discourse about greater implications of a company's actions. Like, there's multiple layers of discourse you can have. And then you can be a fan of the game. And none of those are mutually exclusive. It's just that some of them are stupid or wrong. That's, like in this case, which is just using the wrong word. But it's, yeah, there's layers to it, and it's easy to get angry for no reason. I got really angry at this only because the word sexism has lost all meaning in 2016. When it comes to Blizzard and stuff, it is easy to go, Blizzard hasn't made a good game since StarCraft 1, which makes no sense because people love their games. Like, there's so many drive-bys I've seen on this topic. There's so many, like, hasn't been good since the original. Like, that's not necessarily true. You just prefer the original. Like, there's
still, like 8 million people who think it's good. And, like, I guess just to end this, a lot of people are taken aback by this, both from the archiving standpoint as well as just, like, it just seems that the intention behind Blizzard is still unclear about why they did this. Hopefully they'll bring back legacy servers of their own. Who knows? This was just like, it was a weird thing, and a lot of people are up in arms. Hopefully people calm down and something positive comes out, something constructive at least comes out of all this, especially for the people who no longer have a vanilla server to play on. So yeah, that's all I want to talk about.
The biggest thing for, like, I just wanted to note is that as far as I could tell, the people running that vanilla server, as you said earlier, weren't taking money for it, and more importantly, like, weren't particularly being shady. Like, it would be a different thing if they were running vanilla servers and every now and then there were just dicks flying through the air. Because I was like, maybe that's not correctly representing what we think our product should be. That's fair. But this was just like, you know, just a vanilla server.
It's a non-profit vanilla server, yeah. With hundreds of thousands of people playing.
Yeah, so the only reason I could say, like, as you mentioned, Doubleton, is, like, if they're planning to do either a remake of the original WoW, which I think is actually probably a smart move by them if they do that, or a vanilla server of their own, like, that you pay for. That's the only reason I could see for them to do this. Unless they're just going buck wild, which, as Blizzard does, and doing stupid shit because they can.
Yeah. Fuck you, Blizzard. We're calling you out here on the fucking Scotchcast. Fight us.
Well, we are.
they have
bitches.
I know it's not meaningful, but we are.
They have lots of lawyers.
The last game was fucking Warcraft 3, Reign of Chaos. Suck a big dog.
I've heard a lot of people Frozen Throne really like good. Overwatch. People really like Overwatch. People really like Overwatch. That's like a thing now on the internet. I don't even know.
That game's not even
noob,
out yet.
I think. I think it was a noob. It was you put like Battlefield news next week here on the sheet. What's the Battlefield news?
Well, Battlefield, there's going to be a big announcement about Battlefield 5. That's supposedly World War One fucking shooter.
I think that's really cool.
Man, I think it's World finally War gone around. It's a fucking fun game to play. It's not. I'll tell you right now.
Oh,
it's not
going to
be any good. Well, then it's not going to be World War One.
No, it's not going to be a realistic rendition of World War One.
It's not going to be a realistic rendition.
It's going to be World War One, but with steam jetpacks and stuff.
And regenerating health. It's going to be a minimum.
It's going to be steampunk. I don't actually know what it is.
And if it's not, that's pretty cool too. Like if they do the full like fucking, your med kit means you have to stand there and you find a med kit and then you have to like kneel down like you see your dude fucking trying to pull a fucking bullet out of his arm. That'd be cool. I wouldn't play it, but I'd watch it because I don't play shooters much. But
it's also, I don't know if they would be like a World War well, they could make a single World War One game in that it's like that you have to go through all the different parts of because it's like the what we all know of World War One, and we're taking way too long on this news bit, but like what we think of World War One, we think of the trench warfare in Eastern Europe or Western Europe.
Yeah,
there were other parts of it. Like there was an Eastern Europe campaign. Like there crazy stuff happening in like the like battleships making their way into the Black Sea.
You mean Gallipoli?
Going up a canal and just getting just roast. Yeah, a lot of weird stuff happened in World War One. that maybe they'll take. Like, I hope it, if it is World War One, I hope it's not just trench warfare in France.
No, what it's going to be is, it's going to be trenches. But there's also going to be big machine guns and big tanks and fucking biplanes. And I think biplane is the good thing about the biplanes is for the first time in those games, it makes sense for a plane to go that fucking slowly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The planes are very slow. Yeah. Biplanes like, oh, that's the perfect speed. It doesn't look that weird anymore. It's going to be big fucking tanks. And there's going to be big explosions. And otherwise, it's going to be another shitty game that's not Battlefield 2. So fuck you, DICE. I just wanted to put that up. DICE doesn't make
Battlefield 2 is your like line in the sand. That's your perfect Battlefield.
That was the last good Battlefield game.
I mean, like that is what the Project Reality game is based off of.
Nice. I was gonna say because my favorite is probably still like either Vietnam or 1949. Was it? I forget.
1942.
Mine probably goes 1942, Vietnam, Bad Company 2.
Nice. Yeah, Bad Company 2 is like one of those weird things that isn't like a core Battlefield game. But
Bad Company 2 is a really good game. It's just not a Battlefield game.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's the next on the news thing?
No, just quickly, over under, do you think it's World War One? Do you think it's World War One? I'm pointing at the screen. No one knows what I'm pointing at.
Thurbleton, think it's World War One. Noob, what do you think?
Noob, do you think it's World War One?
I don't think it's World War One. There aren't enough guns. For example, for them to put out fucking
like it's not World
One
because it wouldn't make sense.
No, because it just like it wouldn't make sense. It's sort of like I would be surprised if they do World War One. I know it's going to be bad, but I'll be surprised. Let's put it that way.
Oh yeah, so that was the follow up for you. Is like, do you think World War One is a good idea for the next Battlefield game? Because I think it is. I think it's about time to go back to it.
I think it'd be a good Assassin's Creed Black Flag kind of thing of just like a good side thing, and then. Like I think they can only it's a one note game. Like you can only do it once and then maybe go to World War II. Like I don't know.
Cool. All right, next new topic. Someone has Steam Bitcoins on here.
Steam accepts Bitcoins now. Great. So if you're an idiot who fucking owns Bitcoins, congratulations. Now you're rapidly depreciating coins can buy you games.
So something else on the subject of weird stuff Steam does now. You know you can rent, like, movies from Steam?
Yeah, you can rent. So, some movies you can buy, right? So, I remember 2 weeks ago, like, a bunch of Naruto and Bleach movies. They're dubs, by the way, so don't buy them. Came out, but those are to own. But I think it was Lionsgate or whatever they partnered with.
Lionsgate has, you can rent it for like, four or five U.S. dollars. I think it's, like, 8 or 9 Canadian. Yeah. You can rent it for up to 30 days and you can watch it for up to 48 hours. Time.
Yep.
But it's like stuff that came out last year.
As in like you can watch it over and over again.
I think
24
so.
Times.
It's a 1 month rent.
Over the period of 48 hours. Yep.
Okay.
Oh, and also it disappears after like, I think 2 months or something like that.
I think it's 30 days.
So it's sort of like a good way to, I don't know. Actually, it's not a good way for anything. No,
I think this is dumb.
Get a Netflix subscription. A month's Netflix subscription is the cost of one of these movies to rent, right?
Exactly.
Like, it's just mindless. Who is going to do this?
It's a dumb move.
What crazy person, right? Unless, you know, they decided to cash out all of their Bitcoin.
And this was, like,
Steam
free on their end to, like, fucking to implement this. Like, if it was free to go – if someone went up to Valve and said, we want to sell movies on Valve and we'll do all the work, and Valve was like, okay, that's fine. As from the consumer standpoint, it's like, you shouldn't fucking go to Valve for your movies. Like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah,
like,
it's basically weird.
Yeah, and it's like even they – got it wrong on almost all levels, from like, you know, having dubs of anime to renting shitty movies from one company. I just don't know why. Why are they trying to turn this into a movie platform for no reason?
Man. All right. So now we have the big piece of news. For people who subscribe to our RSS feed, which I assume is most of the people who listen to this, like the five of you out there.
You all are awesome. You all are the best. Thank you.
Me and Durin had like a decent 1.5 hour to 2 hour long discussion about PlayStation Neo, so I don't feel the need to actually go deep into the PlayStation Neo for this. But I do want to give you guys an opportunity, considering like it was just an off the cuff bucket, we should record something because we both really like have thoughts on this thing last week. So the news I want to talk about is either the fact that it's called the Neo and haha Matrix joke. The specs of the Neo were out, and so it's essentially it's a, we equate it to say a 2500K with a GDX 970 in it. That's what this box is looking to be. In more accurate things, it's closer to like a R9 Nano or a R9 385 or 390, but it has even more cores than those, but less RAM. So like it's a fucking powerful piece of tech in this PS4 upgrade. The problem is obviously it's being hampered by the OG PS4. Whether that's a good thing or bad thing is sort of the question. So, Thurbleton,
yeah,
what were your thoughts on the PlayStation Neo? The actual specs that were released.
I think it's great that they're keeping with the Matrix jokes. First the Morpheus, now the Neo.
Absolutely.
Like someone is, just whoever's working in the name department is just like a former writer or something. I don't know. But yeah, I think it's a good, like, it's a slight improvement. It's again the thing of like, there's better PCs out there. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, we'll see how it goes. I am of the belief that it is not necessarily the hardware that is limiting. Like, it's, we haven't seen any great games come out that are really, that I feel are pushing the hardware of the current PS4. I could be wrong. I don't know. Like, I haven't paid attention to any like GDC talks with developers talking about like, no, this PS4 is horrible for making games because of the way it's designed. I don't know. But I feel like that thing has not been properly, like, every inch of it squeezed out yet. So, I don't know. Maybe we'll find better games that can work still on the OG PS4 that would make this one look even better with, I can't imagine, like, what, 4K screen? Like, it's also the weird thing of what they don't let you... like the limitations that developers have for the Neo version,
right? Do you think they're like, what do you think they're bad? Like, which ones would you particularly point out?
Like that you can't have like multiplayer only modes for the new version,
right? I think it's a good thing, right?
I think it's good that they're doing that, but it's also, it hampers it and makes the like, it makes the whole thing weird. And like, I'd almost be okay with like a multiplayer only version, because that means like they're able to design both versions of the game to be as good as they can be. I don't know.
Yeah,
I think it's too many things. Like, doing this,
you think they're wasting better hardware. That's what it sounds like.
It feels like I'm a wait and see approach for this. I think it's cool. Mm-hmm. I feel like they could have made the specs a bigger distance and closer to what current PC high end is like,
right? But $400 though, because like a 970 is pretty close. Like, it's what you've got, right? And it's actually thing has actually got a more powerful GPU than a 970. Like, they can't do much about the Jaguar processor because it's to stay 100% backwards compatible with PS4 games.
Yeah.
So it's probably got a more like a weaker CPU than you've got, but it's got a pretty substantial piece of tech in that thing for $400, right? Especially because the 970 is what, like 250, 300 by itself. So
300, I think. But yeah, it's weird, but I'll wait and see what it's like.
Noob, what are your thoughts on this new type of console gaming?
You this might be now able to play fucking Final Fantasy at 25 FPS.
Oh,
what
God.
A dream come true.
I am so
what
excited.
A dream come true. Like, the smoke is only going to bring you down to like maximum, like, fucking 5 FPS. And that's, like, only, what, 25 FPS from playable. So, congratulations, PS4 gamers. Good for you.
I'm so happy.
On coming to the last generation of PC hardware. Welcome. Welcome to 2014.
I am so happy about this, because like Digital Foundry did a thing of like the top 10 games they want to see upgraded for the Neo, which is a dumb article, because let's be crazy, only like one game or two are gonna get a patch to be improved with Neo, probably, like old games, like Uncharted probably will, Bloodborne might, and everyone else is just like gonna say fuck it, it still runs on the Neo I doubt they're going to actually go out of the way to make it look better. Maybe the Witcher guys, because Blood and Wine, but even then. The cool thing, though, is the things they pointed out were based on, like, their personal internal, like, thoughts on what the upgrade is actually capable of doing. So you have things like Bloodborne going from 30 frames per second to 60 frames per second. They actually think that's physically possible. Same with Dark Souls 3, going from 30 to 60 is actually physically possible with the Neo. The Uncharted is that because of the fact that it's locked 30 at the moment from all their demos, it appears that game could actually run higher, but the devs decided to lock it at 30 to keep it stable. That and the fact that the multiplayer runs at 60, they actually think that Uncharted could probably get to 60 frames a second, which is insane because that game looks fucking incredible. The stuff like open world games could have longer draw distances and way less pop in and stuff. Like that kind of stuff is, I think, really positive for games that are exclusive to console. So again, in no way does this change my perspective on if it's a multi-platform game, get it on PC, because no matter what, my fucking PC will outstrip the Neo as it is, let alone the fact that I'm going to be upgrading to the latest.
Bitches.
Yeah. I'm going to take no matter the fuck what. I don't care what it costs.
I'm not gonna. You know, I could wait a year, get that HBM2. Fuck that. I'm just gonna get my GTDR 5X.
Fuck it. I know it's 2016 and 2017, right? Like, I don't care. at this point, now I've got a 4K TV. There's nothing else I need. I don't have a thing in my like. I have all the things that I want. Maybe a new car, but fuck that. I don't want to spend $15,000 on a depreciating asset that doesn't actually give me much beyond what my current asset does.
Buy Bitcoins. Like,
I could buy. I could buy Bitcoins, or
don't
I could
buy Bitcoins.
Make your money disappear.
Oh no! You know what? Those are the same thing. New graphics cards have more compute units, so if I'm getting a new graphics card,
can go mine Bitcoins.
I can compute Bitcoins. That's my plan.
If you have money for a PlayStation Neo, are you guys saying get a fucking PC?
No, because it's $400, right? So
is it only $400?
Yeah, okay. That's the current.
Save up money on top of that and get a PC.
No, because you can't play Final Fantasy 15 on PC, right? You can't play Persona 5 on PC. You can't play Uncharted on PC. Like, there's reasons to get a console. Console exclusive games have been held back so much because of how shit these consoles are. I'm really happy that the games that I play that are console exclusives, like Neo, which we'll be talking about later in the show, are actually going to look better and run better now. And that's a huge positive. I think it's a no-brainer for anyone who's got the spare cash or who puts visual fidelity as one of the top things they look for from a game. It's a no-brainer. Just get this thing. Unless, of course, the Xbox One turns out to be more powerful, which I doubt, but it would be interesting to see if it happens. Or the NX, which we're going to talk about next, actually ends up in the past. So,
segues.
So, the actual biggest piece of news for people who care about it, for me, is Persona, right? Persona 5 news, obviously. But, you know, for everyone else, the people who matter less than myself, are like, Devlin shaking his head.
Just like for the people who matter less than myself, it's excellent.
No, seriously though, biggest piece of news this week was the Nintendo drops, which people pointed to various people. Austin Worker was one of the first people to report on this, only because he's crazy and he stayed up till like 3 a.m. in the morning. But it was part of the Nintendo financial report. So the Nintendo financial report outlined their plans for the next financial year for Nintendo, which meant that as part of those financial plans, they were able to confirm that the release date for the Nintendo NX will be March 2017. Now, this would be relatively fine to me if me and Duren didn't have like a 1 hour segment as part of our like last podcast talking about like how interesting it would be if Nintendo was able to take this holiday season, because they're in the right position to have the most powerful console now because of reasons. Like I could go into it, but we talked about it on that show, right? But like this was their year to lose, both in terms of E3 and in terms of the holiday season. and in terms of setting up the whole coming generation. This is like the year they could set a positive trajectory for themselves. So like days after recording that show and putting it up, hearing them announce a March 2017 date for their console just after holiday season, just after retailers experienced literally pretty much half their year's worth of sales in a condensed period of time, after everyone's spent all their money in the holiday break, either on holidays or on presents, then they come out with their console that we don't even know anything about at this point, so we don't even know it's worth it. And more importantly, they, or almost as importantly, they're not even going to show it at E3 this year. They're not even going to show at E3 this year. Noob, you're shaking your head. What are your thoughts?
I told you exactly why they're doing this is they realize, oh shit, people really don't like our controller. Let's take a year and make a new one. And again, I'm telling you, fucking summer of 2016, you're going to see brand new fucking patents for those controllers being submitted to the U.S. Patent Office. I fucking guarantee you that is 100% of the reason. People are saying, oh my god, those were fake. No, you know what Nintendo found out? That, oh shit, we better take a year off and really think about this one, guys.
Was this?
And that is, this would that be is the what's
going to happen. Third console in a row of Nintendo's where they're like, I mean, like GameCube was okay. It was weird, but it was okay. Yeah. And like N64 was like, I can get used to it, I guess. I guess.
You mean the controller?
The controller. Right. But then there was Wii, and then the Wii U controller, which like everyone was confused about that, and then now this. I can understand. They'd be like, okay, again, fine.
Not confirmed, but like as New pointed out last time, even though those leaks turn out to be fake, and like amazing fakes, like one of them is actually 3D printed. That's why it looks real, because it's a real 3D printed thing.
It's not a Photoshop, but it's still fake.
Yeah, it's still fake. That's fantastic. That's like, for me, a great thing about the current day. Also a terrifying feature, because now we can't believe anything on the internet. The even things or that actually real look real. Because they are real. They're just fakes. But Nintendo, like New pointed out last time we talked about the control stuff, that the patent that they released was the same period of time between the expected release, like announcement date of the NX, as when the Wii U patent came out, and the equivalency, like how close those patents were to the final product, were actually made a lot of sense considering when the patents came out. Like it was 1 year before release or whatever, and like a bunch of other like pieces of supporting data. Like, oh no, if you look at patent timings, the patent like application form, like the actual verbiage used in the patent, the user's case is demonstrated in the patent, and how equivalent those are to how the Wii U patents were. Like it was 1-to-1. Like those patents almost looked identical to the final product. The fact that the fakes looked exactly like the patent, for those reasons, were like not shocking to us because of how close the Wii U patents were to the final product. But like Noob, like you actually think that they saw the reaction to the fakes and they were like, oh shit. Those aren't our final thing, but like, oh no.
It's just so strange that they would suddenly decide to do this, because what other reasons would there be for seriously pushing back a full fucking year? Let's be honest.
There's an obvious one, though, right?
And it's clear that they were gearing up towards it. They, you know, canceled the production of the Wii U. Not that it was selling, let's be honest. But also, it's just all of this fucking hype. They're building this hype. They're building all of this hype. And then it's suddenly like, oh, fuck. Oh, shit. Thank God these guys released this leak of this controller, because now we know that everybody not only is like ambivalent, they're actively against the fact that this controller exists, and we're being completely ridiculed. And we are so dead in the water if we release this thing as a piece of hardware.
I think that like that is expecting too much of Nintendo. I think that is like expecting too much of
Because the reactions for that Wii U controller, they were not nearly as negative. Like, I have never seen such a negative fucking reaction for these things. And you know what? Like, talking back about Third mentioned the Wii controllers, like, I wonder how many people, this is sort of unrelated, are, like, looking at, like, touch VR, like, controllers on the fucking Vive and saying, oh, the Wii was, like, fucking 7 years ahead of the curve on that one.
Those people are wrong because they went seven years ahead of the curve. They're different things, but like without the Wii, those things wouldn't have been possible, which is great. Like I think that's fantastic, right? But like some of the language that the Wii established for motion controlling is still being used in VR games today. I think that's fantastic. But you're right. Like the Wii U controller that was met with optimism. The fucking leaked fake controllers were met with outright total ridicule. Like maybe 5% of people, that 5% of the messages I saw, at least, like I don't know about the vast silent majority, but for the people, the vocal minority, only 5% of those people were like, oh yeah, this could be cool. I'd say they were
swimming in the Kool-Aid. Those people,
yeah,
the people who are like, "Oh, this is gonna be a really cool thing." You guys just don't know. You know, you guys are afraid of fucking change. Those people, those people would buy a fucking Wii if it was a plastic box, right?
Yes.
So you have to discount. But the amount of vitriol that came out against this controller, it was incredible, and it wouldn't be. I think it would be ridiculous to think that they would be that immune to sort of the outrage and just how much was getting picked up, how much of those fake controllers are being picked up, and just say, oh, this is going to be okay. People will
buy
this.
Because there was like, there were a couple of like insiders who were like, oh, there's Nintendo people I know who are actually like really sad that this thing got out. They never revealed why they were sad. It could have been like, oh, this is casting doubt upon our product, which isn't this, which is, in this case, they would have actually just said, that's not our controller. No. Like, I know Nintendo's bad at messaging, but like, is it too much to expect a fucking company in 2016 to at least have a fucking Twitter post that says that's not our final controller? That's just
they're like disconnected at to least. The fucking point.
No, because
of
anybody
like
who
autism.
Speaks out and says stuff like that on Twitter, they immediately fire them.
Because Nintendo, because they don't talk to their people. They don't talk to the community. It's Nintendo. Oh, sorry, they do talk to the community, but only through pre-recorded one-hour shows called Nintendo Directs.
Yeah, they don't talk.
Which they talk to you.
Yeah, they talk to the community. They don't listen to the community.
Exactly. It's
and the
fucked.
Fact that they're so unwilling to sort of like, I mean, if it was that, if the reaction is like that catastrophic and people are like genuinely afraid for what's going to happen, like it would be a no-brainer to be like, no, that's not what it is. If it was actually not the case.
Yeah.
Which is, again, what reinforces my belief that they actually realize that, oh, shit, this is what it actually is, and we are going to take a year to submit new fucking patents. And I don't think that – I doubt they're creating –
right?
Yeah, I doubt they're creating a new controller from scratch. I bet they had multiple different, you know, like prototypes. But now they're just going to submit one of those patents. And that makes sense. Yeah. They'll do it like this summer. It's going to be ready for release in March.
Or they might just not even need to use a patent, because I don't think you need a patent for something that's just a fundamental like physical change. So if it's like if they're just going to use the Wii U Pro controller, for example, and just put some like actual good materials behind it rather than fucking shitty plastic. It's not even good plastic. It's not even good plastic. They've just put actual like good materials on that. There you go. That could be it. They don't
but like this entire delay doesn't change the fact. I don't think this delay matters because they're fucked anyways if they release this year or next year. So it doesn't actually matter. The funny thing is.
I disagree. So the counterpoint I was going to say is that there is an obvious reason why they would be delayed, and that's just because Polaris, right? The AMD has been wheeling and dealing. I'm not sure if this is a good thing anymore. Like in my head, I thought this was a good thing for a while, but like now looking at this, I'm like, maybe it wasn't a good thing, because of the two companies, AMD and NVIDIA, I'm pretty sure we can all lean on the side of NVIDIA having their manufacturing processes fucking down rather than AMD. Like, I don't.
Well, leaks are saying that NVIDIA is going to be the first to market with.
Yeah. They might even be the more powerful. Yeah. And it's like.
Also, they know how to make drivers and make video cards.
Yeah. They
know how to
make drivers. Well, that's kind of like not here nor there in the console space, but like, like that's aside from anything. But like, so because Polaris is so energy efficient, and NVIDIA and AMD already wheeled and dealed their way into the PS4 and Xbox One, it makes sense that those two companies are going with AMD again, because just for backwards compatibility sake, right? But like things with the Neo, things with AMD announcing that they have three contracts for new gaming hardware, again, that might not be Sony, Microsoft, and Nintendo, because I'm not sure if we said it last time, but like people need to know that there's things like VR headsets that are coming out and stuff that could be using those cards. Like that stupid VR headset me and Noob talked about during that GDC special, like the AMD made one, which is like everything's built into the headset. It's got like an equivalent of R9 Nano in it or whatever. Like stuff like that's coming. So it might not all be Nintendo and Microsoft and Sony, but it sounds like Polaris is just going to be manufacturing constrained going into this holiday season, which is partially why they're getting to fucking market so late behind NVIDIA, which I think is already a mistake if they want to actually sell PC hardware. So yeah, like it could just be that. Like they just may not have had the numbers for Nintendo to go, or they may have few enough numbers for Nintendo to say, okay, we could hit this holiday, but have like only like 1 million in the channel and only like half finished games or like one or two games at launch, first party games. Or they can wait to March and have like maybe 3 or 4 first party games at launch and have 5 million in the channel. And that's probably like the most businessy reason I can see. I hope it's your version of the future, Noob, but I still...
It's hilarious. Yep. Okay.
Well, no, because I have no faith in Nintendo, because I'm with you on those patents things. Yeah. I have no faith in Nintendo looking at the reaction to those fucking controllers and then looking at themselves and going, oh no, but we want to be backwards compatible with the Wii U, so we need to have a fucking fucking screen in our controller, and like having that technology, like making that mistake again. I have no faith they won't make the mistake again. I think it's 100% the next controller is going to be some variant of that patent, and they're not going to change a goddamn thing. I do not have faith in them.
See, doing the thing that is, for your like Polaris suggestion, I don't think it matters if it has a sick fucking graphics card, because who buys a Nintendo product to play third-party games? No, seriously, like the Wii, the upgraded Wii U, I didn't even know this. Looking this up now, it had fucking games like Batman Arkham City. It had Deus Ex Human Revolution. Who is playing those games on a Wii U with a Wii U controller, right? Cool. And the fact of the matter is, like, they can have cutting-edge software, but their third-party game support is so poor. They only really care about their first-party releases. People get those platforms to play the Nintendo games they know and love, and those games are sure as hell not going to take advantage of better hardware. Have you seen the latest Pokemon games? Have you seen the new Legend of Zelda game? They don't give a fucking shit. They could have it running on a supercomputer, and you're going to still get like the same fucking 16-bit music, same 32-bit graphics. It's just, at the end of the day, like, they underutilize their hardware to such a degree because they continue to think that people just want classic Mario. People just want classic. And, you know, you can't blame them for thinking that, because remember all of the fucking outrage people had about Zelda for no real reason other than it looks like a kid's game. It just, I don't know. I feel sorry for them, but other part, like, in another way, it's sort of like, you know, you have to get out of this fucking cycle
Here's the thing, though, right? Because I'm going to sound crazy to myself maybe a year from now, but I'm going to be positive here because I'm actually feeling positive about this thing. I don't play Nintendo consoles for Nintendo games. Like, fuck. I haven't played a Mario since Super Mario World, and I didn't even particularly enjoy that. And I know it's one of the greatest games ever made. I didn't enjoy it. It's not for me. Fuck you. Zelda games are lame because no voice acting, no storyline, supposedly good gameplay, but I've seen the combat in those games. Fuck you. Like, I'm sorry. From Software has made 5 games with better gameplay in the same time that you've taken between your last good Zelda game and the Zelda game that's coming out soon.
No, I mean, like, Hyper Light Drifter is a better Zelda game than Zelda, like in terms of combat.
Right. And I've seen images of people going, oh yeah, this is one of the greatest games, Zelda games I've made. And it looks like this like little dude walking around, right? And he swings his sword and it's just a canned sword swing animation. And it's like not even, there's no impact behind it. It's just like a dude swinging a piece of paper. Like it's just, fuck you.
Well, no, that statement could still be true. If it's a slightly polished heaping ball of trash, better than the other balls of trash, by your logic, I'm not the one saying they're bad. You're the one who says all the Zelda games are lousy, and this one, while it looks great, it could be the best pile of crap by your logic.
You are
not the 99% of Nintendo. That's the problem, right? You can say these things. You can say, I objectively don't like, you know, these main franchises, but Nintendo knows this, and their fans know this, is that they buy those consoles to play their fucking Pokemans, their Marios, their Zeldas.
Like, the weird thing for me, like, I just want to quickly throw in, is, like, Penny Arcade, at the start of the Wii U life, basically gave a great idea to incorporate that controller. It was basically like, hey, the personal controller plays, like, the Dungeon Master, basically, and everyone else's characters. Yeah, and you could like you could make a D&D variant of like game in there, and no one's made it the entire life of the Wii U, and we're talking about the end of its life. Like
fucking Paizo put out a great Pathfinder card game, and yet no one could come up with any form of D&D-esque thing for the Wii U, like, over its entire life.
WarioWare did a bit of stuff like that, where like the people using controllers looking at the TV could see one thing, and the person on the controller with the like Wii U pad could see something else. That was like a halfway step, but it's still like the WarioWare stuff is like bite-sized games, and no one's actually made a full. Sorry, you were saying something.
Yes, I'm not a fan of the old Zelda games. I'm not a fan of the Mario games. I think Donkey Kong's dumb. But the third-party support that has been on Nintendo consoles has been fucking awesome. Like, Ghost Trick is one of my favorite mobile games of all time. Pokemon is actually a second party. Shovel Knight's fantastic.
But Pokemon games are published by Nintendo.
Yeah,
but and the Pokemon company is owned by Nintendo.
Are they? No, they're partially
owned. Pretty sure they are.
They're partially owned by Nintendo. I think it's 40% share or something like that. They're not fully owned. That's why I'm pretty sure they're not 100%. Anyway, the Game Freak. But yeah, like the fucking Ace Attorney games, the like I think fucking so, like I think Masa, like Muramasa. I might be misremembering, but I swear that started as a Wii game. It's one of the few places that you go that still just has this very old school Japanese feel to a lot of its games. Like PlayStation has that to some extent, but it's lost it along the years. Games that just feel more big, grandiose. They don't seem like the smaller Japanese kind of game. Fire Emblem is fantastic. There's so many good games on Nintendo stuff, and the NX, if the rumors are true, which I fucking hope they are, is finally going to unite both halves of Nintendo and actually have one place to play all the Nintendo games. But fuck that. There's going to be one place to get every single Nintendo third party game. And that's so fucking cool. Like Bayonetta 2 was on the Wii U. Like I didn't fucking buy it, cause who the fuck wants to buy a Wii U? But if the NX is backwards compatible, I'll play Bayonetta 2. So like, I don't care about Nintendo. I care about the third parties on Nintendo stuff. Even though that third party support's weak, some of those games are the best games on those systems. So the point that me and Durin brought up was this has the potential to be, considering it probably has Polaris in it, the most powerful console, and also be sideways compatible with every other console's generation because it's using the same fucking card.
Even if it is the most powerful console in the generation, what it is it's the most powerful console in the generation for you to play your Donkey Kong and Mario games, right?
No, because ports are half the reason Wii U doesn't have any ports. Like it had ports at the start, but doesn't have any ports anymore because it's an entirely different architecture.
Like the other reason was because the controller was lousy and it was hard to port. Like you'd have to trust that people buying it would also buy a pro controller. And so, hopefully they come up with a different design other than what's on the current patent.
Exactly.
And get Polaris.
Like, so I this continue could be... to maintain to this day that Nintendo consoles are a prison for fucking game franchises. And the sooner these things die, the freer the game franchises, and they'll fucking
I see where you're going. I actually totally agree, because would I have rather played Phoenix Wright on a Vita? Absolutely. 100%. That would be an awesome on a Vita. Like, you don't need the second screen stuff for Phoenix Wright. You just want to, you're just doing nice anime art and the size of like a good OLED screen. Like, that's great. I would have loved that. But no, like, just straight up, like, because it uses the same architecture, ports will be free, essentially free, just a different export aside from unless the OS does something stupid. It'll be like really easy ports for developers, which means that what's the game coming out to start next year, and what's a company that's known for putting one game out on every Nintendo console? EA, Mass Effect. If that's the best place to play Mass Effect on console, it won't be the best place to play Mass Effect because PC is that. But the best place to play Mass Effect on console, and it looks significantly better than the others because this thing could be spec'd like a Neo and not be held back by the original PS4. So this could have the best ports, like multi-platform releases. This could have Mass Effect on it, which looks fantastic. It could have every Nintendo game on it. It could have all the good Nintendo portable games, but now on an actual console. Like, even I, as dyed-in-the-wool person who doesn't like Nintendo, will buy this thing.
I'm so shocked that you have this optimistic of a perception of what this console is going
to
be.
I need to be optimistic because otherwise it's just
I think Nintendo got burned by the fucking Wii U at making an expensive console. They're probably going to build the reverse, like a new Wii, like a console for everybody. And it's going to play your favorite Mario games, your favorite Zelda games, and it's also going to have a controller that you don't want to play any games on.
If they screw the pooch on this next one, like if they don't
set those games free,
multi-platform stuff.
Apartheid.
This could be the best place to play Final Fantasy 15. That's a big deal to me, anyway. Or it would have been if it come out this year. If it had come out this fucking holiday season and was the best place to play Final Fantasy 15, just because it's more powerful, I would have waited and played it on that. But no, it's not happening. I missed that opportunity. There.
Mass Effect Andromeda is not being developed for the Nintendo console and will never be.
I wouldn't be surprised. Also, play that game on PC. It's a shooter. Come on, what are you doing?
They sent them the early copy of the NX to develop on, and it's like, no, we can't make a game that plays with this controller. I'm so sorry.
I'm so sorry. We were really excited, and the next controller
is not going to be any better. If you don't want to play any games with a Wii U controller, you're not going to want to play any games with an NX controller.
It's just going to be the Steam controller.
That would be great if they made like a deal with Steam, and then they put all of those games on fucking Steam.
That would be hilarious.
Everybody wins. Everybody fucking wins. Who is going to buy a Nintendo console if you can play all Nintendo games on Steam? Think about that. The fact of the matter is, people go there because they have nowhere else to go. It's a fucking prison.
Here's an interesting thought experiment. So I have two questions to ask you. Before we close out this topic, the first one to ask both of you guys, which is unrelated to what you're just talking about, and I'll get to the one that was related. So unrelated to what you guys are talking about, because I'm just curious, do you guys think that A, missing this holiday season, and B, not being at E3 overall hurts them, or do you think they were doomed anyway, or do you think they were just like, they missed an opportunity? Like, what are your thoughts on their marketing scheme? They're going to have a solo event for this thing, but it's not going to be E3.
I don't know. Like, it's the thing of like, of there, there's like the thing of like, they're just going to follow through with the current controller. They might wait and see and like redesign the controller. They might wait and see like it. I don't know what they're doing anymore, but also like most of the possibilities for what will end up happening are probably ones in which I'm not that interested anyway with Nintendo. Like, I'm a bad person to comment on this only because I'm not Durin and I'm not a big Nintendo fan.
He was more negative than I was.
Yeah. I mean, like,
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. A noob, do you think E3, this marketing scheme, do you think...
Well, part of it is I don't think it's necessarily a bad idea to avoid E3 in a season if Xbox One and they're doing PS Neo and it's going to be really crowded, right? Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, you don't want to be, you know, trying to compete your console when all of these other consoles are throwing their, you know, things into fire. But at the same time, you know... Like, it's also, as you know, a 4.5 release on those consoles, so it's
thank
not
you. Yeah, it's a vote of no confidence on your own thing. Yeah. It's a vote of no confidence on your own fucking thing. If you can't, if you don't think it'll compete against 4.5.
Yeah, it's like, okay, and also, it's one thing to not release on a holiday season in the summer when there's no competition. It's an entirely other thing when there's a huge chance that these 4.5s are going to come out at the holiday season. People are going to spend their money, and then to come out just fucking 3 months, 3 months after that, and be like, hey, did you guys been waiting for the Nintendo NX? Shut the fuck up. Like, seriously. And the fact that Thurb just mentioned that, oh, maybe they might be building on their current, you know, NX controller patent just made me incredibly scared, because I didn't even think of that possibility. Like, and it's very likely
they could just be going, just like, yeah, keep the train going.
Well, yeah, they could totally be thinking, and I just realized that this is Nintendo, where, oh, all we need to do is change a couple things. We just need to add an analog stick, and that will solve all of the fucking problems. It's just like, oh shit, I forgot that we're talking about Nintendo, and it's sort of like, it's like they didn't shoot themselves in the foot. It's like they sprained their ankle and then cut their leg off. It's crazy what they're doing. It's just very strange. In sort of like the date that this thing's coming out, the fact that they're straight up, you know, we're not going to say it at E3 when all of this game's coverage is, I think they're either overestimating how much people care about this thing other than just for like laughs. And it's like they think people are waiting for this as like the second coming. When reality, right, only Nintendo fans are waiting for this as a second coming. Everyone else is just waiting and seeing. And people aren't going to be fucking waiting and seeing in March of 2017 after these new 4.5 consoles have been coming out.
It all depends on like when they put out, because like the actual smart way to do this is the one that's been proven successful by Sony, because they just fucking did it like 3 years ago, which is to have a early year reveal, which just gets everyone excited, talks about your games, the things that actually matter, which is the video games, how good they look, get developers on there that seem excited, get like this Trump out. Like, oh, we're making a new thing. They talk about all your philosophical stuff. Get you maybe your specs out of the way, which are, and that kind of stuff. And then at E3, you do what it looks like, price, release date, and rest is games. And you actually show the games and deliver on your promise you established earlier. It's a proven model because someone just did it, and surprise, they shipped 40 million PS4s. They're dominating. In fact, they're dominating to the extent that the PlayStation Network, PSN, made more money last year than the entirety of Nintendo. I'm not talking about just the Wii U. All of Nintendo. And that's just the PSN of Sony stuff, right? It's a good 80 billion yen, like more, right? it's just, no, 80 million. Or something like that. It's like some large amount more, and that's just PSN. Like, that's the model that works. E3 still matters. Don't be crazy. It's not like EA pulled out of E3. They just are doubling down because they're renting their own space and doing even more stuff just outside of the LA Convention Center. Like, Activision pulled out, but they never really have a conference in the first place. Like, Bethesda is now showing up at E3. The PC game show is going to be bigger than ever. Like, E3 matters now more than I didn't even understand people say E3 matters less, because that's not how these things work. Like, more people are watching it ever than before, live and post recorded. The amount of money going to it's less, certainly, but the more games are being shown and they're getting more coverage because there are more websites out there that actually get more traffic than they used to. Like, overall website number is fewer, but traffic to websites is larger. Like, E3 matters now more than it ever did before. And the fact that you're missing this obviously dyed-in-the-wool concept and model for your console is fucked up. Also, it's less than a year out now. It's like, what, 9 months, 8 months, sorry, 10 months away? And we still don't even know what it is? We don't even have rumors as to what it is? Like, what's that saying about the confidence in your fucking product? That you're not even asking us to get excited. You're just pretending it doesn't exist.
We'll see what happens at E3. Yeah. Like, it could be a thing that like, they're waiting to announce then.
Nail in the coffin.
I don't know. I think we've talked about the Nintendo news.
I just have the one last question.
We're still not knowing really anything.
Yeah, so this is the last question I have, and again, because I'm curious. Do you think there is actually people who aren't already proud owners of Wii U's that would go into the NX? Do you think that this is a loss? Like, Noob, you brought up a point earlier of, like, the only people excited for these things are Nintendo fans, and we already know there's about 12 million of those because that's how many people own a Wii U. Do you think Nintendo actually needs to care about what the rest of us think? Do you think that they've got a captive audience and they're just going to keep capitalizing on that? That's all they ever need.
but it will only get smaller. It doesn't matter. Like it's not. It may not get halved. It may be only three. You know, one quarter smaller, or whatever, less than that. But you can't. The point of a business, you can't just stay stagnant or, you know, decline slowly. You want to always be growing. You want to always have a greater player base, etc. Like, expand your fucking business. And if you're slowly fucking capsizing and you're thinking, oh, we got this small toehold, let's just keep it the way it is, you're destined to fail. That's the fact. It's because what it means to game developers, let's say, that you're only willing to put this, like, small thing is – small portion of the game world, all you're saying is you don't necessarily have to develop for a platform. It may not be worth the fucking cost out of your way to, you know, have a multi-platform release, etc. And your pool, and it's all it's going to do is increase sort of what's happening now, where it's like these first party titles are again what's drawing people, nothing else. And then that's the fucking end. You're only merely delaying the inevitable if you're going to plan on sort of saying, okay, we're going to fucking turtle this. We're going to turtle this out and wait until fucking civilization ends because we got our loyal followers.
Right.
I don't know.
Thurbs?
I've observed never rule out Nintendo. What might look like to us, them capsizing could just be them, like it's a Frog Factions-esque thing of like as soon as they go under the water, there's a whole new pool of people that we still don't identify with what their product, but like they're with the Wii, they were able to pull a whole lot more people of just like grandparents of families, and like the Wii influenced so many more people than what we consider to be like the common video game enthusiast, and so like. Yeah, they didn't hit gold again with the Wii U, but Nintendo is the kind of company that is just going to keep trying crazy shit, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Again, looking back at their past few controllers. this is probably going to be a flop for like us here on this podcast and maybe a fair amount of our listeners. But I'm sure there's enough people who aren't listening to us and who maybe not play a lot of video games who would be like, oh, I don't like the PS4 or I don't like the PS Neo or the Xbox One million and a half. I don't know what the new one
is. Xbox 160. Xbox 180.
Xbox 180. Yeah. But I do like this other stuff and I like this controller better. Like it's... As much as we like the current 360 PS, like the DualShock controller design, there is there's a set bias with games like that, and the best games ever could be may require a different type of controller. So I'm okay with like let Nintendo go crazy. It could be a sinking ship, but maybe it's a U-boat. Who knows?
Maybe, but I would also tell you right now that the controller that we've seen leaked is not a controller that we've best.
That one's weird.
That is what we're waiting for. That's not what we're waiting for. What we're waiting for is something to be able to play video games on. And I guess with that, that's it.
Yeah, that's it. That's the news for the week. So we're going to take a short break and then come back with what we've been playing. And we've actually been playing stuff, so this show is actually might just go up from here. I don't know.
Yeah.
See you guys after break. And we are back. Dublin is taking a quick extended break. He'll be joining us in a second. But while he's out, Nubarama, you've been playing Hit... Okay, no. You said a very controversial thing to me today, which is like, Hitman might be the best game this year. And I was like, fuck you. You're crazy.
Oh, you thought I was being facetious. Yeah.
Yes. I'm like, what are you talking about? Tell me, Nubarama. What the fuck? So this is Hitman it's not Hitman original.
Hitman, this is the fucking like 2016 Hitman release that's come in episodic format. So, you know, people don't actually play it and people avoid it like the plague for the first year when it's in full price. this is that Hitman by Square Enix. So basically, it's like the worst thing ever because this is actually a really good game. It's just that nobody's going to play it because of how they decided to release it. And also, right. It's like it was a broken mess for a while. So
was it broken?
It was completely broken. It was like apparently for a lot of people, like with like 980s, they were getting 10 FPS or something. Like for me, I can play on high with like a solid 40, 50 FPS, which is fine for me. I don't need 60. But yeah, so I guess I'll come into this with sort of like what Hitman experience is. It's like, so the first Hitman game I played was Blood Money. So the third Hitman in the franchise and generally considered like the best. And when Hitman Absolution came out, I bought that on a release and I was fucking sorely disappointed in that game as a Hitman game.
Right.
I actually enjoyed Hitman Absolution because it's an excellent third-person shooter. If you want to go through the map, just killing people with no stealth, just going cover to cover, shooting people in the head, throwing knives at their heads, it's a fine game. But if you want to play like a stealth sort of murder game with like interesting ways to kill your targets, that's open world. No, it's like a corridor linear shooter. So I ended up picking this up today, in fact, like a couple hours ago, along with another game, because the second episode of this game came out. And for those who do not know this game, they decided to say, oh, we're going to release it mission by mission over the course of an entire year.
Right.
And most people were not pleased about that, turns out.
Yeah,
fucking nobody bought it because who the fuck wants to wait a year for their game to come out in small pieces of DLC? And the only reason that I ended up buying it is for some reason I've been really bored this week in terms of like having nothing to really play, because this is like my last week before I start work, so I'm sort of like, okay, I have something, I need to do something, but I just, for literally days at a time, I was just staring at my Steam games list, just looking for something. And what I was looking for specifically was like a legitimate murder simulator, like a serial killer simulator, where I could kill a lot of people in many, many different ways. And then I realized,
you have problems.
Shit.
We're a public servant. I don't know how you got through.
Yeah, but I work for the fucking tax department, so that tells you
a lot. That makes a lot of sense now.
Yeah, so... the second episode of this came out, and the first episode actually had a fairly mixed response. This is the first episode was a thing set in Paris at like the fashion mall, mostly because it for the most part took place in one giant building, and so it wasn't as open. But the second episode, a lot of people are saying this is like one of the best Hitman experiences of all time, that like ranks with some of the best levels in Hitman Blood Money. And so I'm like, okay, I'm going to have money later this week, whatever. I'll shell out on it for $66 because it was like $10 off. And so I played it, and my God, it is like some of the most fun I had playing like a Hitman game ever, or sort of any sort of stealth fighting, killing, murder game. Like comparable to some of like the earlier Thief stuff in terms of just like sneaking around and causing havoc. And so I'll go over it. So the first mission... I think it's been talked about in a lot of places, but it's sort of like a generic Hitman. Like it was almost like a middle ground between sort of Absolution, that sort of like claustrophobic feeling of always being inside, versus sort of like that scale and sort of things you can do in Hitman Blood Money. So I don't think it was necessarily like an amazing start. They definitely did not start strong in the game, but I had a lot of fun. I spent about 4 hours going around. So I don't like playing Hitman by killing just two targets that are given to me. I like playing Hitman by emptying the entire map and killing each and every person on the map. And in this case, literally like 1,000 NPCs, maybe not 1,000, somewhere between like 500 to 1,000, because my official kill score was about 175 by the end of the mission. But yeah, so you go around switching costumes, throwing knives at people, fucking snapping their necks like a monster, sneaking, like climbing up walls. There was a lot of opportunity to do that, and it actually kept me interested for 4 hours. But what I did not expect, and this is part of sort of the thing that's very conflicting for me, is that the second episode, Spazina or something like that, it takes place in an Italian town, and it is genuinely... It's difficult because in a lot of modern games, you towns feel empty, right? There just doesn't seem to be enough people. There doesn't seem to be enough things going on that it almost feels like it's in a like a simulated experience. But for like for this level, it genuinely felt like a living, breathing town sandbox where you can literally murder people and there's a genuine reaction to it, and where you're going from building to building and going inside a lot of buildings, and the scale of it was basically something like I've never experienced before in sort of like a Hitman game. And so it genuinely pulled me in immediately, and I had a smile on my face the entire time I was playing, murdering or not, just exploring what was going on in this island. And I encourage everybody to see the first trailer, not the launch trailer for the episode, because it really shows you sort of Agent 47 is going around murdering people in this different locales, and it gives you a sense of the scope of this level. And part of it is a lot of people are speculating, and I'm speculating this to myself because it's such a night and day difference between that first and second level and just sort of the, you know, the freeform level design. That giving the time between these releases is giving the devs a chance to sort of actually listen to what the gamers are at least complaining about and actually put that into the game, because I was so shocked at how amazing of a Hitman experience. And I was only playing that level for about an hour and a half, 2 hours, and I could easily imagine myself playing that for like tens of hours even, the second level. Right. So I'm incredibly surprised at how good this game is. I genuinely thought I was just picking this up to just blow off steam for a couple hours and then just forget about it. But I am very excited to go back to it, and I probably will after this podcast. And a lot of people are saying, you know, I'm not going to buy this until the full expansions come out. But there is an option to buy episode at a time, although you do have to buy the intro pack to buy the separate episodes. And if you are craving Hitman, like the second episode is genuinely one of the best Hitman games I've ever played by a long shot.
And wow, that's glowing praise. Well, again, if you play it the way you play, like if you like playing way.
Even if you play like a stealth sort of fact, like where you're only eliminating two targets, one of the biggest criticisms of, you know, Hitman Absolution is it's clearly defined that you're supposed to kill them in like two or three ways. In just sheer terms of the entry points on the map and the AI scripting where they're walking around from a research facility to playing golf, etc. And because these maps are so big, you have these endless opportunities on not only where you're going to jump on the target, you know, when they're taking a piss, when you feed them rat poison, they're throwing up in a toilet, etc. Or you know, wear the clothes of someone they're supposed to meet. And so sort of the location of the hit all the way to sort of the tools that you're given to do it, simply because of how big and open this game is and how many costumes, how many NPCs are walking around and sort of how many patrols you need to look out for and sort of the scripting on that. And there's obviously jankiness to a game this big. But at the same time, it never really took away from my enjoyment of the game, right? And so, and it's conflicting because of how they decided to release it, which ultimately is not great for the gamer because you don't want to play like 2 5-hour experiences at this point. You want to play a full game because most people don't like going back to a game fucking every 3 months because it's there's other things to do. But at the same time, it's just it's so good that I would genuinely recommend somebody pick it up now. Like, just to get that second episode. It is that good.
I mean, like, on what you were talking about of people don't want to go back to, like, revisit a game a couple months out of it. What people have enjoyed about Hitman games and what it sounds like this Hitman game is, it's not necessarily an overarching story as much as a really well-crafted story, like multiple, like, you know, tale
about, it's many set pieces.
About a location.
Yeah.
But games that do have an overarching story that some people are more or less okay waiting like a couple months for are the Telltale adventure games.
And Life is Strange and a couple of those.
Yeah, like it's not just Telltale, but yeah, you're right, Cynic. Just like that style of game. And I think like it's not crazy that the developers thought that might be a decent format to try with their title. So,
right,
like that's worth considering. Like if you look at it from that approach. Like this model is not unheard of, and then you might be able to correct me on this, but I think that like they are still bringing in the old system from Blood Bunny game, in which people can have like custom
challenges, I guess, of like, hey, kill this chef yes. with this weapon. And so, like, there is that to hold you over for each area up until the next level is released, right?
Oh, yeah. For sure. But I mean, it's just – actually, I think it's closer to every month more than every 3 months. I don't know why I said – but at the same time, it's sort of like you can only play a level so many times every month before you think, okay, I am good. But I also want to play something new, right? And that feeling of wanting some sort of progression in your game, that doesn't exist in that in Hitman as it is, simply because there's always that wall between, sure, I can go back and play all the stuff I did, like – in the last 8 hours, but I also want to go to a different locale. You're just tired of seeing the same thing. And at a certain point, you do end up being like, I think I've figured out everything. I've seen most of the things that this level has offered me.
Well, and that's hopefully where, like the time you spent in that level was worth the $10, I guess, or whatever the cost for your region is.
Genuinely, like having spent $66 on it, like I don't feel like I've been like gypped, right? Like, oh man, this was a really bad choice. Now I'm going to have to wait because of the amazing amount of fun I'm currently having in the second level. But at the same time, that may not be the case for everybody. So as much as I do really recommend this, like if you can, buy it now. But if you – I think for the best experience, it might be worth waiting that extra year. But I guess like most – what I mostly want to talk about is how surprisingly good – at least the second level. If it was just that first level – I would be pretty pissed. I would be like, I can't believe I spent $60. I continue to make bad choices with my money. But the second level has sort of justified my purchase. And it is that good. And I don't know if that means anything. But in terms of like, if you like Hitman games as they were, like before Absolution, 2 is a huge seller for you. Yeah.
Nice. Cool. That's far more. Again, you're going to have to fucking fight me to get it out of Game of Year list. But...
that's what Game of the Year lists are all about, fighting.
I'll fucking stream it to you. I'll stream it to you. It's good.
You have two other things here. Just go over.
So I also bought another game. And I'm saying this mostly because it's one of those fucking awful Grognar war games that I play, right? It's a game called Decisive Campaigns Barbarossa. It takes place on the initial invasion phase of the German invasion of the Soviet Union that occurred, of course, 1941. Infamous. Yep. Right? Everybody knows about this. But it's interesting because I think Thurb would like this, this aspect of the game. So it deviates from sort of the regular sort of command your divisions, encircle enemies, cut their supply, destroy the enemies, right? Very simple kind of basic war game things on hexes with counters. But what's interesting that is added onto this game is the previous games had it to a certain point, but it was more for the point of actually fighting the battle. But this game is interesting, and of course, World War II is famous for the horrible atrocities that happened during the war itself. And this game adds a moral dimension to on top of the wargaming. And I'll explain in an example, for example. So you're given political points as a general fighting for the Germans or the Soviet Union, right? And basically, with this, you can order, you can request extra divisions from central command, from high command, right? You can order new objectives that you might not otherwise be able to take with the current troops. And sort of, it tries to simulate sort of the political bickering that exists at sort of the high levels of command in an army during wartime. But what this adds to that on layers is, in World War II, of course, you had the horrible political sort of the SS and the war crimes that occurred and sort of the generals that were fighting the enemies but were often complicit in those war crimes. This gives you an option to enable or disable the Geneva Convention rules set when you start a game. And basically what this means is you'll often get messages from high command, like sometimes directly from Hitler, saying we're going to send in these death squads behind your lines. And basically, you are given the option. You can just say no, and you'll gain political points that you can now use in favor of Hitler. Please send me more divisions. Or you could be like, this isn't going to happen. I'm going to report you. This violates the Geneva Convention at the cost of your political points, which prevents you from overruling other commands from high command. And this the risk of this is other than them taking away your possible troops is also at the end of the game, apparently, if you lose, you can be convicted for war crimes. You as a player, basically, what happens? And this dirty aspect of the war and this political bickering means Hitler will often send you these crazy, unrealistic goals, like capture Stalingrad, for example, with like three divisions or whatever. And you have to make that calculation. Am I going to sort of do this horrible stuff, allow, you know, the Einsatzgruppen to wipe out a town and just sit by? Or am I going to take a moral stand here? And you have to choose your battles in that case, right? And it also goes further
You have to choose your political battles as well as your real ones.
You have to choose your political battles, but also real ones in the sense of partisans are springing up, destroying supply lines, destroying railroads. Do I fucking wipe out every child, man, and woman living in this town so partisans are no longer splitting up? Or am I going to – or am I willing to lay down a couple divisions – for rear defense that are otherwise rapidly needed in the front? And it's sort of this completely other layer of gaming that's really interesting. And it adds a – because these games have no narrative inherently, right? Because they're purely move your division here, encircle the enemy here, meet them to fight here. But this adds your own sort of struggle and your own role-playing to a certain degree. And I think that's really interesting. And I thought you guys might find that sort of a speck of interest. Yeah,
you're right. That does sound interesting. I'd have to look at the UI and gameplay to see if it's something for me. But like just you talking about it is interesting. Like it's the only other game I can think of that comes to mind about like the human element of war is This War of Mine, which is the civilian viewpoint. But yeah, that's
– very different game, but yeah.
Yes.
Yep, and cool. Also, like, if you're playing the Soviets, for example, Stalin is a very paranoid person. And what it means is if you can put politically sort of acceptable people but are awful generals, or you can put good generals that are politically unacceptable, and that also plays another risk. So it's just an interesting twist on what is a very old and tired sort of genre that I find interesting. But yeah, and that I also bought today. What else I did this week when my friends were
grief
around?
Grief people, apparently? Because how is that different from what you do every week?
But I was griefing people on the internet. Like, so there's this game called... Okay, so I play Garry's Mod. I'll talk about that. It's very short. But
I've never heard of Garry's Mod. Is that a game that you can grief?
Is a game called Garry? What's in Garry's Mod?
Okay, Garry's Mod basically is...
Shut
like
up! Don't explain what Garry's... What did you do in Garry's Mod?
That doesn't sound like a game. That sounds like a mod.
There's this game mode called fucking Trouble in Terrorist Town.
Oh,
I think everybody knows what this is.
Oh,
and
my
basically,
God.
Me and my friends go on servers, like a couple of us, like four or five of us, go on servers. And then, you know, we basically try to split their community apart. And what happens is like one of us will do just like a dumb voice.
Talking
right?
about like destroying, like burning railroads, towns, and villages.
Right. Exactly. We'll find like there's always one server with like an edgy kid, right? Who's like, oh, fucking nerds, fucking losers. Oh, this is so funny. And then, you know, you go in making this voice like, oh, do you guys like Naruto? I really like Naruto. And then they immediately like jump on you like you're bait, right? And you're basically baiting them. And then you're saying you sound kind of retarded. And I know what a retard sounds like because I am one. And you get them really angry. And what ends up happening is they fucking randomly shoot you in the face when they're not supposed to. And what happens is you fucking report the shit out of them, being like, he fucking killed me! He fucking killed me! And then what happens is the admins that are friends with them on the server want to maintain the server rules, so they fucking slay him. And then you're creating this dynamic of where you're obviously baiting. And it's this gleeful feeling you feel when you're turning friendships around. And making where you know this guy's totally in his right. Like we're going around stabbing him when nobody's noticing and being like, we didn't do that. And he can't do anything about it. And it's like we're basically gaslighting him. And it's great feeling you
people.
Get when they fucking disconnect. It's great. And another thing we did is Town of Salem, which is sort of like a text-based flash game. Do you know what Town of Salem is, Thurb?
No, I've not heard of that.
Are you guys familiar with either Mafia or Werewolf?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. So for those who don't know, it's basically everybody in the town you know, are either a mafia or a werewolf or whatever, depending on the game type. This is more mafia, but it also has werewolf in a custom pack. And there's like a serial killer, etc. And you have to figure out who is the murderer in the town, right? And people are using text messages. What's interesting in this game is it takes place and it sort of like evokes sort of like the Salem witch hunts in the sense that there's a day period and a night period where people are discussing. And what happens is people can vote to lynch somebody they think might be the mafia or the werewolf, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so there are roles that are encouraging, you know, you have a task to kill this certain person via lynching or you have to get lynched. And there's the mafia who has to kill everyone and the town members have to band together to figure out all of the bad people. And it's a flash, it's a web game that's for free on the web. And what me and my friend decided would be super fun is to just open up a bunch of tabs on Incognito and join a game of 12 people with five of us just being playing, just multi-boxing. And what fun that is, because you can basically just go in and we just named ourselves dumb things. In our first game, one guy, like I started typing like crazy 9/11 conspiracy theories, and then you can leave like death notes on people when you murder them and just have like, oh, you know, open fire can't melt steel. It's not hot enough. And just fucking around with people. And people get so angry in these flash games. And it's just so funny. And we spent like 10 hours doing it. And every single game sort of. It's a lot easier, definitely, when you're playing 5 of the 12 people. And just randomly voting people that are good because we can. And just baiting people. It's so much fun.
I almost don't want to say this to you. But do you. Have you played, because I know some of the people on the PC Gaming Hub play Tabletop Simulator. They've played in the past. Do you know Secret Hitler is on, like, there's a Tabletop Simulator variant of that game?
I did not know that.
What have I done?
You should probably play Secret Hitler.
But I mean, like, the part of the griefing comes from the fact that you're doing it to random people.
It's no, yeah, like, to people do you don't know, right?
I'm assuming you can jump into pub servers of that.
Just ruin the days of people you don't know. That's fun.
Yeah, but it is fun. Okay. And I suggest if you have a group
of
friends,
people I know.
Fucking go on the internet and cause havoc. That's what you're going to do. Leave no man, child, or woman alive.
Doubleton.
What's up, Cynic?
Aside from Dark Souls 3, because... All right, so yeah, we haven't even talked about this. At the end of the show, me and Doubleton have finished Dark Souls 3. We'll talk about it then.
Yeah, that's, we're going to do deep dive for that at the end.
Deep dive. After the credits. But aside from Dark Souls 3, Derbs, what have you been up to?
Well, I played a little bit more of Hyper Light Drifter, and it's very fun talking about that game in comparison to Dark Souls 3. So I'll try and do my best of that while not talking about Dark Souls 3, I guess.
Yeah, that's fine.
I basically, there's, near as I can tell, there's like, again, I've talked about this before, what looks like four bosses, north, south, west, east, and then a center boss that is the final boss that you unlock, I'm guessing. I don't know.
Yeah.
I faced, I've previously beaten two, north and east. Very fun fights. Like, the north one is definitely an amazing fight to do. I recently did the west fight, which is like this... kind of like you're fighting like a Dark Souls boss. Like, he's a big dude with a sword that does a bunch of different attacks. And it of this game engine of this, like this, the design that like this feel and look and how the combat works and everything. This is pretty much the Artorias fight.
Oh, nice.
It's one where like, it's just like you have to do like you are evading half the time, and then the other half, like, then there's a few seconds where you can like get maybe one or two attacks in, and then you have to keep evading. And like once every like 20 seconds is when you have a chance to heal.
Yeah.
And so you have to survive you have to survive for 20 seconds on your five hit points. It doesn't matter how many health bots you have. It's because you have five hit, like you can only get hit like two or three times. Yeah, like it was by far the toughest fight I've had to deal with in the game. Like, other people might have different issues with that game, but
They also revisiting it since Dark Souls happened. The developers apparently added a lot more like health pot locations around the world, as well as currency. So you can more than easily get enough currency to buy all the skills and whatnot.
Cool.
But yeah, like people's previous had raised some issues of like, because of the way the save state works, like the checkpoint system, I guess, entering and exiting rooms, they were sometimes having to deal with an entire section with a single hit point and no health pot. So hopefully that issue has been fixed. They've made it like they've made getting health pots a little bit easier now and stocking up on them. Mm. But yeah, it was a boss fight that took like a couple sessions and like leaving to go like farm up currency to buy new skills and then going back and then just like trying to figure out the fight. Cause the other ones, they were much more,
sounds bad to people, but that's probably, that sounds fun to me. That's great.
It's the best fucking Zelda game ever made.
So the,
no, that's Darksiders. Don't be crazy. Darksiders is the best fucking Zelda game.
Like the other boss fights, especially the East boss as well. Those were really fun fights. And it was also just like it was whole arena style fights of just like the North boss is like certain tiles on the ground become like red and you basically can't stand on them. And it was a neat thing. This one was just this guy is constantly chasing you.
Yeah, this guy is tough. He's going like, to fight you.
Yeah, you don't have time to attack because the animation it takes to attack, he's already coming down on you again. And it's not worth trading blows. It's the kind of fight that, like, at the end of it, you, like, look back and, like, oh, that was only, like, a less than 2 minute fight that felt like 10 minutes.
I love it. But you have to be 2 minutes of perfect play, and that's, I fucking love it.
Yes, or very much near perfect. The window for screwing up is a lot tougher.
It's very small, yeah.
But yeah, that game is still getting really good. The UI confused me, like is definitely like hit me up a few times, and I was luckily enough since I've been streaming it to people in the chat informed me of like no, it's look for these for areas you haven't explored and stuff like that. But otherwise, it's still a really good game. I don't know if I'll talk about it again unless like the other two boss fights remaining are amazing. But man, that game's good. I recommend people try it out.
Cool.
How much is it?
20, I'm guessing. Let me actually take a look at it.
That's pretty cheap.
Yeah.
It's like 20-25 something.
Yeah. I mean, like the other thing is there's not a lot of game. Like I said, it's probably five bosses. So like it's $20 US, with the soundtrack is 25. That feels like a good price for the amount of content there because it looks amazing. The soundtrack is really good. It's a quality game. It's probably going to be on my game of the year list.
Nice.
We're close to a third through the year. But it's definitely probably going to make it at some point on the list. That's it for Hyper Light. I've also been playing how would I describe this? Indie horror game? Indie adventure action psychological horror are the popular tags used on this game called Left Alone.
Left Alone?
Left Alone. It's a great game to like stream and then just laugh at. That is still it's a little bit spooky. It's more spooky than spooky. There's nothing has jumped out at me yet, and I've spent like an hour and a half in this game. I've been in like two of the levels.
It's like an atmospheric spooky game.
Yeah, it seems like it's the graphics are good.
Yeah, they're all right.
Yeah, they're all right. So. They're all right graphics. It's not horrible graphics. But then it's the stuff of like
looks like Half-Life.
Yeah, your character. It looks like Unity Engine though. Actually, I don't know. I'm pretty sure it is Unity Engine because.
Oh yeah,
I think when I started up, it was saying, like
Kind of like the office. It's in offices and that kind of stuff.
So you're set in Wisconsin, you are, it's set in the woods in Wisconsin, where you are a army vet who had some like psychological issue and has episodes of like disorientation and blackouts. And so you decide to meet up with some buddies of yours to go fishing in Wisconsin, and you fall asleep or something and wake up and they're trapped in a school and you have to go help them, and horror, like just all the horror tropes ensue.
Right.
So that's the scary side of it. Now I'm going to talk about the like comical side of it.
Okay.
So you pass out at your campsite and you wake up and you get the text of like, "Hey, help us. We're in trouble." And then immediately you look around and then like it's there's a flashlight for you to pick up and it highlights pick up torch. And immediately I was like, "Oh, it's this kind of game." So walking along and you end up they are stuck inside a school. And the road leading to the school has got some speed signs. Speed limit, 10 kilometers per hour.
Nice. That's good. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's, yeah, okay, yep.
Set in Wisconsin, zone, United States of America, 10 kilometers per hour. 10 kilometers per hour is like a 5-mile speed limit in the woods.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Yeah, that's, no, you only ever see that in the possession zone. That's, yep. Yeah.
So after a little bit of puzzle work and figuring stuff out, like the puzzles were, like, maybe because I know, like, what I need to do, they were a little bit easier for me to process and go through. But, yeah, it's definitely I'll be happy when we find, like, a text wiki or something for this game. Because I've been playing with a friend of mine. We just, like, I put him on a screen share and we Skype together and all that. Then we get to the school. I'm pretty sure almost every room has got a map of like some province in China.
Nice.
I don't like.
Where was this game made?
Europe.
I think England. I think. I mean, like, it's got torch. Well,
it's the kilometer signs, right? In America, so yeah, they call it in Europe.
They call flashlights torches, and they have kilometers.
And, yeah.
It's by Volumetric Games. I guess I'll look up to see where they're at. Maybe they're located in China. I don't know.
Oh, wow. I didn't even get what you meant by the flashlight torch.
Oh, yeah. Thing. Yeah, I thought you meant torches in, like, okay. So you mean British like torch. Okay.
No, I did mean British torch. Torches
you holding a, like, a fucking torch, like a fucking fire, like a stick. Fire stick. I was like, oh, okay.
No, but it's great. It's a great game. It's great in that it's got me cracking up half the time.
Those are the best kind of games.
Yeah, I just want to quickly, before, like, to end this, I want to read the Steam description on this game. Left Alone, and also, like, the notes that you find for people are often horribly, like, there's, one of the people you're following is a reporter, and he has the worst grammatical errors ever. Like, he does lowercase I's, there's spelling errors, it's great, and he's a reporter. Left Alone is a psychological horror game set in multiple believable interior and exterior events. This game has a unique, old-school, high-octane atmosphere, which means you'll feel like you're truly beginning an adventure you'll never quite forget. Positive reviews. Positive. It's also like $7 US on Steam. So it's, yeah. You get what you pay for.
That's cool.
Nice.
So that's you, I guess?
Those are the games I've been playing. I guess briefly,
So,
I was looking at games, and there's another game that I want to get. I was just going through, like, old Giant Bomb videos, and I came across a game called Gunstringer, more so a free DLC called the Wavy Man Chronicles. I guess that'll be my plug, the quick look for that, because it's amazing. It's like a Western shoot 'em up thing, but it was made on Xbox. But it is available on Windows 8 and Windows 10. So my Windows 7 PC now finally found a reason to, like, because it's, I have to do it before July anyway, but now I have a reason. I might as well get it done now. Mm-hmm. So I've made two attempts now to try and reformat this thing. Like, when I upgrade to Windows 10, I have the option just to reformat. And I've tried, and both times it gets to the installation process and then just stops.
Weird.
Yeah, it's not – I mean, like, it's weird enough that looking up on forums, there are other people who have this issue, and basically I just need to try doing a thumb drive install instead, and hopefully that'll be better.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Okay, cool.
But yeah, Windows 10, just PSA, the end of July this year is when it no longer becomes free for previous owners.
Oh, shit. Okay. Damn. I wouldn't be surprised if they pull a normal Microsoft thing and go, you know what, fuck it, we're just going to have free forever. Because they keep having sales on Xbox One, which is just like, oh, it's $50 off. And then they're like, you know what, fuck it, we're just going to keep it at $50 off.
I wonder how Windows 10 works for like the licensing kind of thing. Because Government of Canada computers are still on Windows 7.
Yeah, same. Or same with Australian defense stuff and all that kind of stuff.
But yeah, speeding through.
I don't see us moving to Windows 10. I'm saying that.
What do you mean? It's a quality program. It's going to be great.
All those shows where the government has crazy futuristic shit? No, don't be. What are you talking about? We don't have futuristic shit. We just do really well with the old-ass shit we've had since, like, the 60s. You'd be shocked at how much, like, modern shit is running off 70s and 60s tech. But is also,
the America's nuclear missiles are run off the 3.5 floppy, or 4x6 floppy disks? The floppy, yeah,
whatever's
floppy disks.
Most reliable, man. Whatever's most reliable.
Our ICBMs require the oldest technology to end the world.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
But yeah, apart from Dark Souls, that's all I've been playing. How about you, Cynic?
Cool. So I've done a couple things. I've read a series of books that I thought would be really dumb and stupid, but ended up being actually really fantastic. After watching the Eisenhorn quick look, I'm not going to talk about Eisenhorn. I haven't read Eisenhorn, but Jarbone had a quick look called, which is about Eisenhorn, the Warhammer 40K universe, series of books that have been recently translated to an indie game.
Giant Bomb East did that, right? And Vinny was driving it? Yeah.
Either Vinny or Austin, but they were driving it. And it was fantastic because, A, I didn't think Eisenhorn was going to be interesting. I thought it would be dumb 40K stuff, and I always found 40K stuff dumb because of how, like, over the top it is. But, like, the idea of a cool-ass, like, fucking hard-boiled detective in space, that's always been cool. There's many books that do it that kind of idea, but that plus things like magic and stuff, but in space, this has been like an interesting like trilogy of things that I thought was like very rare, and it is actually very rare outside of 40K fiction. But there is a series of books called Starship's Mage, which I found because it was like really highly rated on Audible. Like, it was over 4.5 stars on the Australian Audible, at least. And on Goodreads, it's over 4 stars for every book. And that's actually really rare. Like, we're talking about, if you put in like movie terms, IMDb ratings above 8, like that, like, I know that's the same as 4 stars, but IMDb ratings, like, if you think of how few movies have IMDb ratings above 8, that's the kind of thing I see when I see a book that is over 4 stars on Goodreads. It's like, okay, that's actually probably a really good book. So I read Starship's Mage, the first one being Starship's Mage Omnibus, because it's actually a grouping of a bunch of short stories. More like a serialized, not really short stories, but a serialized piece of fiction that this author made that he combined to one book that got so much traction that he actually wrote an entirely second book called Hand of Mars. That series is actually shockingly good. It's in a universe where technology is still developing at the pace we're currently developing it at, and it's around the 23rd century. But
so everyone has like glowing eyes and are just summoning stuff with their mind.
No. So what happened was in the like 2100s, 2200s, when we finally started colonizing Mars, and it was just like small level colonizers, like a couple hundred people, a couple thousand people. The people over there said, fuck it, we're going to start our own government. And they actually started practicing eugenics. And the eugenicists over there started breeding people. And something about, and this is again when it starts crossing over to sci-fi fantasy, it's something about the way they bred people and the people they bred and what they were looking for in those people bred mages. So after maybe like 100 years of eugenics, they created mage race, a race of mages. And this isn't in the books at all. This is all like lore that the books establishes. Like it's all the distant past. And what happened was the mages finally birthed through this process, saw that like fucking hundreds of thousands of people had been like treated as numbers and like mass, like grazed like cattle and like fucking like slaughtered if they're useless and fed to each other. Like just fucking horrible shit was done by the eugenicists.
This is real life, right?
No, this is.
This is Warhammer 40K, a documentary on. It's a post history documentary of things that have yet to happen.
Yeah, exactly. And so the mages essentially turned on the eugenicists, wiped them out, and then to broker peace with Earth, they gave humanity the stars. So mages can warp, and through the use of amplifiers, they can warp starships.
Is this just so, Dune now?
I don't know. I started reading Dune. I didn't particularly like the part of it I read, but I started reading Dune. I don't know. Because it's way more the way they talk about things and the way they like express how governments work and how people react to horrible situations and like what the world would be like if magic just suddenly happened in the 21st century and like the people like people's thoughts about that and like all kinds of stuff is like actually treated really well. So it's like it's got this fantasy element to it, but it's treated in the same way you could say DC Comics are grounded. It's treated in a grounded way, right. with like actually well developed characters to some extent, like not all of them, because the first one's serialized, so you definitely get that kind of feeling that not many characters were deep. But like it treats the world in such a way that you actually get the feeling that A, none of the evil dudes are actually like 100% evil. They're actually the type of evil people who are like they're the heroes of their own story, right? They are no. It's not black and white. Everything is either is shades of gray. No one is perfectly good. No one's perfectly evil. But it's not. It doesn't go all the way where even the good guys like an anti-hero. No, like there's still heroic figures. There's still people like in real life who have morals and actually stand by them and fight for them and that kind of stuff.
It's a battle of ideology, not of good versus evil.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of what all the bad guys so far have been like. Even like syndicate leaders and like mafia bosses and stuff in this future are not entirely evil. They do fucked up shit. Like they have slave trade and stuff like that. But like they have reasons for why they do that and all that kind of stuff. But it shocked me at how good it was. It's earned its rating on Goodreads and Audible. I highly recommend Starship's Mage. It's a new author. I think he's only written 4 books called Gwyn something? Starships.
Gwyn Stefani.
I'm sorry. Yeah, Gwyn Stefani. Yeah, that guy. Mm-hmm. Glyn Stewart.
G-L-Y-N. For those that don't get it, he was a famous dictator, Gwyn Stefani.
Shut up. Glyn Stewart is the writer of Stardust Maid's Omnibus.
Fucking
and
close enough, eh?
He also has a second series, which I haven't read, which I'm thinking about reading, which I think doesn't have magic in it. But yeah, no, it's really good. Aside from that, I finally used my 4K TV for something. Friends were over for Anzac Day weekend to just like hang out at my place as a thing and good door service and all kind of stuff. And I was like, fuck it. If my friend's going to come over, maybe I'll have something to watch while we're like, you know, eating pizza and shooting, like shooting wind or shooting breeze or whatever the fuck they say. The old people used to say. And I got Netflix 4K. And whoa. Netflix 4K is okay. I don't know. Like it's.
I mean, is it worth the. But I mean, is there enough content that's in 4K for it to.
There's not enough content, but the content you want is 4K. So Daredevil is what I watched. And it's really good. Like I really like the new seasons of Daredevil. It's not as good as the first season, in my opinion, but it's pretty good. But like, there's the good shows are in 4K because the Netflix originals are in 4K, right. And that's kind of what you get Netflix for. But what you realize is that camera tech hasn't really caught up to 4K very well. At least not the cameras that big studios use. Because what they're doing is essentially using film cameras in many cases and then digitizing film. And so what you get is that like film grain and a bunch of like other kind of like old school kind of effects on a very clear image. And because of how clear it is, that stuff kind of bugs me more. It's very much like, and I don't know if many people at home remember this, but the first couple of years of Blu-ray, when those happened and you finally got 1080p for full HD content, this was the same thing where like things kind of looked a bit soft and film grain was far more noticeable for a while. And that's what a lot of the 4K stuff on Netflix is, which is very weird because 4K stuff on YouTube actually looks fantastic. So people like Hardware Canucks, and I think Linus Tech Tips, like a bunch of other like PC hardware sites and like that kind of stuff, like just like tech sites.
Well, I mean, they do film for the sake of 4K, right? I guess that's the big difference.
Yeah, and well, and those people are using like DSLRs, and I think that's why it kind of looks better, because I think DSLRs are cheap enough that people can buy a very new DSLR with 4K capability. Rather than companies who'd be reticent to buy new 4K studio quality cameras for like $1 million, $2 million a pop, right? So I guess it's like one of those things. But yeah, Netflix 4K, I don't think is worth it. That's my takeaway. That's the end of that topic, honestly. YouTube 4K looks fantastic though.
Are you only using Australian Netflix though?
Yeah, I'm using Australian Netflix.
Okay. Yeah,
but it's the same encoding, right? It's I have.
Oh,
this,
no, I'm just wondering in terms of just the number of shows that's.
Oh yeah,
supported,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I'm using Australian Netflix. They frown upon using VPNs. Also, I don't really have a VPN service.
They've cracked down recently on VPNs hard. Netflix.
Yeah, yeah. So, finally, since the only other thing I've been playing is Dark Souls, I've been playing a surprisingly good game this week. Surprisingly good. This is the second surprise I've gotten this week. One was Starship Mage, the other one was this one. Nioh. And not to be confused with the Matrix or the PlayStation, but
Nioh earlier. Yeah. And I thought you made a mistake and thought you mentioned PlayStation.
No. Yeah, it's Nioh, which is unfortunate in this current climate, but probably won't be a problem next year when it comes out or whatever it is. It's a PlayStation 4 exclusive. Have you guys heard of this game?
I mean, like, apart from, I've heard of it, but only in light of just like, hey, this is like, I've heard of it recently with the thing of, hey, this game that was announced like a decade ago or so is finally out.
Yeah. Oh, it's finally in beta.
Maybe that's it. It's finally in a playable form for some people to play and show.
Exactly. So it's a free beta that's closes on the 5th. I think it's the 5th of the 5th, actually. Persona Day, as it will forever be known. I'm pretty sure it just closes on Persona Day. But So the people making this game are people who'd be famous to Noob for the creation of Dead or Alive Extreme Beach Volleyball.
Whoa! Fucking gods walking amongst men, huh? Gee whiz.
But they'd be famous to people like, you know, normal people for Ninja Gaiden. One of what the first of what the developer, and I love this, calls dying games, which is, I guess, what he means by like hard games or what more people like today would probably call Souls-like games, which is sad because Ninja Gaiden kind of did that before Souls. But in different ways, obviously. But this is essentially Samurai Souls Gaiden. It's a mix between Diablo, Ninja Gaiden, and Dark Souls. And it is surprisingly fantastic.
Nioh, you said.
Nioh, yeah. It's a PlayStation 4 exclusive, sadly. It's not coming to PC, and I think that's a detriment. So essentially the game stars Geralt of Rivia, and I say that because That's unfortunate. The dude looks exactly like Geralt of Rivia. Like, I've seen, there's been multiple cases even in the last 2 days where I've seen art for one, either Blood and Wine or Neo, and have been unable to tell which game that is because of how similar this guy looks to Geralt. He's just a white dude with a scar across his face with blonde hair or white blonde hair. And he's even got like that kind of piratey shirt, like that medieval kind of shirt and pants. So it's like this very Geralt of Rivia kind of look. The only difference is this guy uses a katana rather than a fucking longsword. So
it's like a weeb Geralt of Rivia. Rivia, I mean.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. It's based off of supposedly a actual historical figure who was like this, the son of a merchant that went to Japan and then kind of just like did stuff, like the son did stuff, so it's like based on him and he's white. Of course it's got like demons and Oni in it, so like I don't know how far you can lean on that, but the idea behind the game is, so enemies kind of kill you in two hits. Any enemy can kill you in two hits. It's like Dark Souls. We were talking about Dark Souls 3 last week, in that like every area kind of has these cool enemies that are tougher than all the others, like Lothric Knights in the first area, or there's a couple different ones. It's as if every enemy was those in terms of how much damage they do to you and how scared you are of them, but you can actually also kill them really quickly. So it's like both you and them have low health and do a lot of damage. But what that means is, even a situation where there's just two enemies on screen, you're like, oh fuck, I need to get the fuck out of here. I need to run the fuck away. And not because you can break their loss, because unlike Dark Souls, as far as I can tell, there are no limiters. They will chase you across the entire map. There's no rubber banding. So like, if I accidentally aggro two dudes, I'm running away and like stopping for a second just to block for a second and to do like one hit and then keep running. Because, and not only that, it's got a stamina bar just like Dark Souls. But when you run out of stamina in this game, it's not like you're just like, you can still move and kind of just like, some moves can even, in Dark Souls can even be done with zero stamina. In this, when you run out of stamina, you actually like stop and take a couple breaths and can't do anything during that animation. So like, you are leaving yourself wide open. It's only for like a second, but that's long enough for you to be like, oh shit, I done fucked up. I could be dead right now. It was literally one of those games where like the first enemy in the game, and this is again just after Dark Souls 3 come out, so it's like most of us kind of are in this mindset already, but like you wash up on a shore, there's a shrine in front of you, and I'll talk about that in a second, and then you go around a corner and there's an enemy. And around that enemy are like fucking 15 bloodstains.
Jeez.
Like, it's like, holy shit. I haven't seen that since like the first Dark Souls. Like so many dead bodies. And it turns out like, yeah, like if you swing at the wrong time and he hits you, that's 3/4 of your health gone. Full stop. No fucking around. That's a third of your health gone. So 2/3 of your health gone. You hit him a couple times, he'll die too. But like, you have no room to fuck up. The lock-on mechanic kind of makes that difficult, because unlike Souls, where when you lock onto the enemy, everything you do is relative to that enemy, in this you can still free roam. It just means that when you swing your sword, you swing in that direction, or when you block in that direction. So like, you can definitely get to situations where you're like missing the enemy because he moves slightly and you're moving slightly and you're swinging. That's not to say that that feels bad. Like, even though on default this game runs 30 FPS, it actually feels pretty good. It's got some weight behind all its moves. But to describe my first couple minutes with the game, I fought the first dude. I went around the corner, saw the bloodstains, saw the first dude. I was like, okay, I'll take this guy seriously. Killed him. He took off 3/4 of my health. I'm like, okay. Went back to the shrine. I was like, okay, this isn't a Souls game, so he probably will be dead, right? So go back to the shrine up. Go back. He's back alive. I'm like, oh, okay. So this is kind of a little bit like a Souls game. He kills me the second time I tried because I fucked up. And I was like, okay, I'll try like this stance in this game. I'll talk about it in a second. I'll try something else. And he killed me. I'm like, okay, I'll walk back up to him. Kill him without taking any damage. Sweet. Okay, I got that guy. I downloaded that guy in Street Fighter, in like fighting game terms. Downloaded him. It's good. Every time I fight him, never lose health again. Go around the corner. there's one dude. I'm like, okay, sweet. He's got the same weapon. He's probably the same moveset. Sweet. Go up to him. A dude who I hadn't seen, who's just like sitting on the ground next to him, gets up. I'm like, okay, I can probably get two of these guys at the same time. Like, I down this one dude. That's fine. I hit the first dude. Second dude, like, the first dude's his own hit stun. Second dude didn't have a katana. He had an axe. He did 1.1 times my total HP and damage to me in one hit and killed me instantly. And I was like, okay, all right, I see what you're going for, game. I got you. I know what you're doing. All right, sweet. And then when I finally killed the axe guy, he dropped a weapon. And that weapon was a yellow. And this is like the third level of influence. This game has got like Diablo-esque loot tiers and like loot drops. The randomized loot drops, as far as I can tell, to a large extent. You generally get weapons from enemies and like gear from drops, like from like items. But like as far as I can tell, and I've only played it for like 2 hours, so maybe I'm wrong on that. And so there's like loot drops. So you can have like different levels of loot that are on your character, and there's like scaling and all that kind of stuff. And it's this really great confluence of ideas that I was not expecting at all when I booted this game. To the point where I think that this game could be one of the best games this year if they don't fuck it up. Like, it feels right. Like, so to talk about the combat, there's stances. So with every type of weapon, you have a high stance, a medium stance, and a low stance. And anyone who actually did sword fighting, like I did actual like medieval longsword for a while, that's actually a thing. Like, you are actually, when you're fighting with people, deciding which kind of area to have your sword in. And those are actually pretty much the three areas you consider. So you consider being up high, which means you get essentially more reach. Being in the middle, which as this game treats it, gives you a more easy ability to block stuff. And or being at low, which is actually the best place to block stuff, but does less reach in real life. In this game, it makes it dodging easier and uses less stamina. So in effect, you are essentially switching between stances depending on what enemy you're fighting, depending on whether you need to be dodging more for that enemy, whether you need to be dealing more damage for that enemy, or when you want to be parrying that enemy. And like that, in combination with the fact that every weapon feels like incredibly different. There's three weapon classes I can tell. There's pole arms, swords, and axes/hammers. And they all feel entirely different. But a cool twist on it is, unlike Dark Souls, where like you have a fixed moveset. Yes, you do have a fixed moveset, but that's per weapon type. But beyond that, you can actually invest skill points, which you gain at every level, to learn new skills. So if I unlock this skill, I can hold triangle with an axe, and the dude charges up for a second and spins in a circle and just keeps spinning as long as I can hold down triangle, or he runs out of stamina. Like, there's actually like legit action game-esque skills in this game too. But they're balanced. So it's not like all the skills are just definitively better and all you'll be using is skills. Like the spinning move did like 100 damage per hit, whereas a normal high stance hit would be doing like 300 damage a hit. So it's like everything's just kind of a mix of risk reward. How do you want to play this game? How do you want to approach the enemies? What like distance do you want to engage them at? Do you like all the stats are meaningful? They all like contribute to different parts of the build. And you can build out different ways. You can build towards ninjutsu. You can build towards magic. You can build towards physical attacks, or just like defense and getting heavier armor. I'm legit impressed by Neo. Like, surprisingly impressed. Like, Thurbleton, you'd be nodding. What are your thoughts? Would you be interested in Neo?
I don't know, but like everything you've been talking about, it reminds me of my favorite fighting game, I guess. And that people who will hear me say this word will be like, that's not a fighting game, but an old PS2 game called Bushido Blade.
You're totally, yes, 100%. A, that's a cool fighting game. No, yeah. And that's totally fine.
But like the concept of like
Smash Brothers, then yeah, you'd be right. It's not a fighting game. No, yeah. This is Bushido Blade.
But,
yeah,
but no, totally. It's just like, yo, they will take you out in a single hit, and you can take them out in like close to a single hit. If not, yeah. But it's it's now becoming a thing of just like, I don't know if my current relationship with video games is such that I don't know if I would be able to commit that much time to it. Like, the entire time, I'll talk about this later with Dark Souls, but like, near the end of that game, I was just like, can I get this over with? I have other stuff I want to do. Can I get this over with?
Yeah.
But it sounds great. It sounds great. Everything you're talking about.
This feels like it could be a really long game, because the demo is two areas and people are spending anywhere between 5 and 15 hours in just those two areas, depending on how they find it difficulty wise, because it is one of those games where it's all about execution. It's all about just learning your enemies. It's like a Souls game. Like there are Souls stuff, like there are bloodstains. There is like a lot of really cool twists in that though. So bloodstains in Dark Souls are a great feature where sometimes you go around a corner, you see a bloodstain on the ground, and if you go up to it and hit the interact button, you'll see like a shadow of the person rise in the bloodstain and then move around the map. And you'll see him you don't even be able to see him. You wouldn't be able to see what he's fighting, but you'd be able to see the sequence of events he went through, which led to his death. Which is great because it can inform you about what's around the corner if you pay attention, or you can inform you about, oh no, don't jump off that ledge. There's probably nothing actually down there. Or that jump is actually too far. You'll probably die.
But the soapstone sign says I should jump, and there's treasure down there.
That's secret. In this game, you see bloodstain. That kind of gives you that idea, but you don't get the phantom. You don't get the that ghostly image of what happened to the person to lead him to die. It doesn't do that. What you can do is, if you walk up to a bloodstain, you can summon a revenant. And what that means is, you actually summon the player with his gear from his bloodstain, and you can fight him. And if you fight him, you have a way that you get great XP, and you get a way better chance of drops of what he was wearing, I believe. And that's fucking cool.
It's weird,
you
but
get
cool.
this like great, yeah. You get this like weird like choice, because like you can be like a situation where, oh yeah, I've downloaded all these enemies. I know exactly how to fight them all. I lose no health through like the first three quarters of this map, so it's kind of getting boring. But wait, no, you can actually start fighting revenants, and they have a bit better AI. So you actually kind of choose, oh, if I want to get more XP as I travel to this map, I can just fight the revenants along the way and fight and get more loot and get more XP. But then I'm fighting more things. They got better AI. They might be better equipped than even I am. But you get this great risk reward kind of thing from it. There's the skills thing, which is great. But one of my favorite things about this game is, and it's kind of tied into the next thing, is it's got the loot run thing, or the souls run thing, where it's like you drop your the XP you were carrying at the time on a body, but it's not a body. What it is, it's like adorable little wolf creature, like this fire wolf. That guy sits there around what looks like a bonfire, like it's a sword in the ground and like a fiery kind of effect. But it's this golden adorable wolf thing. You go up to him in a circle and you get the stuff. But the wolf thing is kind of my second point, which is there's another element of you can tell it's these guys got a sense of humor too. Like even though it's a really dark game with really hard enemies, the shrines that you pray at to level up. They've got a little frog dude, a frog demon dude on top, and he's kind of does a little dance and fucking jumps for joy when he sees you and stuff. The little wolf dude who's there when you pick up your corpse is a total bro. In the menus, it's got happy little those frog dudes are on the shrines, but it's those happy little frog dudes do happy little stuff. And the music's fantastic. It's not it's fucking crazy Dark Souls fucking orchestral, everything's about to explode music. It's just more nice piano and more calming kind of and pretty music. There's a lot of heart to this game that I didn't expect as well. I think this could actually be one of the best games to come out this year if it executes on this.
If it comes out this year.
Yeah, if it comes out this year, A.
It could languish for another decade.
Exactly.
This Square Enix?
No. I know it's Ninja Theory. So not Ninja Theory. Team Ninja is the actual developer. I don't know who the publisher is.
Okay.
Team Ninja is the guys who did DOA. So the actual fighting games DOA, and you can feel some of that DNA here. Ninja Gaiden, you can feel a lot of the Ninja Gaiden like DNA in this, and Dead or Alive Extreme Beach Volleyball, which you can feel none. I don't believe you can feel a single part of Dead or Alive Extreme Beach Volleyball in this. In fact, it might be weird to say, but I don't think I've seen even a female character model yet. I think that might be a problem, but I don't know. Yeah, it's pretty cool. And that's it. That's what I've been playing.
I'm thinking of Nier. That has a very similar name.
Yes, NEAR. Yeah.
That was the one from this past E3, which the guy had like the weird helmet thing on.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Back in.
I think.
That looks like a video game. But yeah, cool. Plugs?
So yeah. Yeah, if you're out there, and this is posted before the 5th Persona Day, you can play Neo, and I'd say give it a shot. Or you can watch Jam Bomb did a thing on this on their playdate, but they had server issues in their end. I don't know why. Like, I didn't experience. Most people didn't experience server issues, but Jam Bomb did. I have no idea, but they did play a bit of it, and they did walk away with a positive impression. But like. Probably better is Easy Allies on their YouTube channel. Ben Moore, who's their like Japanese games guy essentially, was played like 2 hours of Neo, and you get a lot of insight because he just finished Dark Souls 3 himself. So you get a lot of insight from that as well. I'd watch that on YouTube. So Easy Allies Neo playthrough with Ben Moore is where I really go to see this if you don't get a chance to play it yourself. So with that, that's all we've got for you this week. Aside from Dark Souls 3 talk, which will happen after the credits, because we're going to go deep spoilers, because me and Thurbleton both finished the game, and Noob is going to go to sleep because he's a baby.
No, I'm going to probably play more Hitman
because he's a baby.
Yeah, and like murdering baby, not a baby murderer. You like
moving
murdering
on to
people.
Plugs.
If babies were there, maybe I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Thurbleton, what are your plugs this week?
Again, just yeah, the it's an oldie but a goodie. The quick look of the Wavy Tube Man Chronicles, especially if you're a fan of Ryan Davis. It's hilarious. It's Ryan, Patrick, and Brad. It's just 20 minutes of silliness. And if you have a Windows 8 or a Windows 10 operating system or an Xbox, you should check that out.
Noobarama.
Could I recommend, I'd like to plug Thurb's book that he showed quickly on camera. It's a really good book. Empires of Eve by what's his name? Sorry?
Andrew Groen.
Something like that.
G-R-O-E-N. He's a former editor at Wired, or writer at Wired, and left to do a Kickstarter.
If you want to know why this book is something you really want to read, search Empires of Eve, The Atlantic. The Atlantic has a really good short article on why this book is so amazing in terms of what it is for video games, what it means for sort of like internet social interaction. And it's a really good read. And I'm waiting for the hardcover version to come to Canada because it has some sick pics of some propaganda that happened during that war that I really want to pay a lot of money for. But yes, that and the PC Gaming Hub and also Hitman is a good game.
My plug is... Oh, no. Why did you not log out, Netflix? Fuck you. God damn
it. Is it Daredevil in 4K?
No, it's not Daredevil. Daredevil's kind of, it's all right, but it's not great.
Is it the new Adam Sandler movie? Those are great.
I'm just going to go off the top of my head. There is a stand-up comic. If you watch...
Jimmy Carr?
No. If you... it's close, but no. If you like the episodes of this podcast with just me and Noob and how like fucking off the rails and
Jim
like...
Jeffries?
Nope. And like how like almost... not politically correct, or like most of the time not politically correct, but like unapologetic about it, and also like not entirely
wrong.
C.K.
Lewis?
Nope.
Bill Burr?
Louis C.K.?
Yes. So the only Netflix stand-up comedy, stand-up comedy on Netflix, sorry, that we found that was over 4.5 stars average rating. So like it was the highest average rating Netflix stand-up comedy, at least on the Australian Netflix, was Bill Burr. And I thought, I was like, huh, that's, I've never heard of this guy. I wonder how good it is. He is now one of my favorite stand-up comics I've ever seen. He's fantastic. he goes, definitely, he's definitely not PC. But if you like the kind of like, hey, thought provoking, but also funny, but also like, I'm not sure if you're entirely right, but I can't tell you you're wrong. Humor. Bill Burr. It's the one on Netflix is, it's called I'm Sorry You Feel This Way.
Yep. He also has animated TV show that's really awful.
I haven't seen the animated TV show, but it's really bad. Yeah, I watched that, and I watched a bunch of his stuff on YouTube because, for better or worse, there's like full stand-up comics like specials on YouTube, like 1 hour ones. I probably should pay for it, but whatever. I'll think about it. But he's fantastic. I really love his work.
Bill Burr is very good.
Yeah. And aside from that, yes, Starship's Mage. I'll be putting a goodreads.com link in for Thurbleton to put in the show notes. And with that, thank you for listening to the show this week. That's our episode of the Scotchcast. Stick around after the break if you want to hear us talk about our final impressions of Dark Souls 3. Probably won't hear about it again till Game of the Year stuff. So thanks for listening and goodbye.
Hey everyone, it's Thurbleton here. Those of you looking at the time until this episode ends can probably piece together that the Dark Souls talk does not happen in this episode. It gets near 2 hours, so I'm going to end up posting it a couple days afterwards, as well as Cynic messaged me saying he'll probably end up doing a recording of his impressions on, I think, the May the 5th stuff with Persona. So any fans can look into that as well in the feed. It shouldn't automatically pick up on your RSS only because depending when you guys download this. If it doesn't, just check there for automatic download or manual download, rather. And you're good. Thanks again for listening and have a good day, evening, whatever. Take care. Bye.